desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be across this great land of ours, well beyond, because we cover all 24 time zones. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's going to be mainly an open line hour this hour. I do have something I want to call to your attention right away. A cannon is dead. Peter Fisk is his name, and he has done what... Actually, I did do a couple of times. I'm almost ashamed to admit, but not quite. Peter Fisk, writes, I recently exercised my Second Amendment right to repair a Canon BJ5100 printer. When the green light would not stop flashing, the solution is on page 357 of the owner's manual. The Ruger 45 bunt line is merely included in the photo for perspective. No firearms were harmed in the filming of this printer repair job. Peter, obviously, we've got the photo up there for you with Peter aiming his 357 at the soon-to-be thoroughly dead Canon printer. You know, this has happened to me, and I get nothing but the best. Canon and Hewlett-Packard and all the rest of it, but... there's something about electronics. As you know, I'm kind of an electronics kind of person, and I have never been able to let anything rest. If something is wrong, I will either A, repair it, B, and I'll spend days at that, even dreaming about what might be wrong, or B, in final desperation, break it so that nobody else will ever use it again. And when I was younger and less patient, I did a couple of times shoot electronic stuff. I finally lost my temper after every possible attempt was made, and I did what Peter has done so graphically. He includes the photos. And if that's you, you know, if you've done this kind of thing yourself, you or even thought or dreamed of it, you will appreciate what Peter has done here. So we put that up on the website for you. If you'll go to artbell.com and merely look at what's new, I see that Keith has entitled it "Fun: What to Do with a Broken Printer." Computer stuff can be frustrating. All right, briefly in the news, the war. The Taliban supreme leader radioed his commanders on Wednesday and called them to fight to the death against Americans in southern Afghanistan. In other words, we're getting close to home there. Meanwhile, Pentagon said Wednesday that U.S. airstrikes damaged a compound near the Taliban's strongest and last stronghold, Kandahar. And so we're moving in on them. I still reach out and ask you, if we get Osama bin Laden, what do we do with him? Nobody seems to have too many answers to that.
Well, we fry him in pig fat, Art.
Or, you know, something like that. But, I mean, what really do we do with him? Do we kill him on the spot, bring him home, have a big trial, or, I don't know, something else? A CIA officer... Johnny Mike Spann, killed at Mazar-e-Sharif in northern Afghanistan. He was the first American to die in action inside Afghanistan since the U.S. bombing began. Imagine that. All of this war going on, and we are now reporting the first man killed in action. Others have died in accidents outside the country, but related to the war. But he is the first person, the first, to die in action. And he's a CIA guy. The House overwhelmingly approved $20 billion in an anti-terrorism package tonight. Do you now feel safer? After derailing a Democratic drive to defy the president and add billions more for domestic security. Infantry from the Army's 10th Mountain Division have crossed from Uzbekistan into northern Afghanistan to help protect other Americans in dangerous areas near two air bases, and I still am amazed that so soon after the Cold War, we are basing troops in former Russian republics. Now, imagine, you know, 15 years ago or less, if we had suggested that U.S. troops would be based in Soviet territory, or more likely former Soviet territory. People would have laughed, right? But there they are. The U.S. Signed a contract today to buy 155 million doses of smallpox vaccine from a British firm. That'll bring the nation stockpile to 286 million doses, and that's almost enough to get one for everybody, right? Oh, listen, somebody emails me. I bet you've forgotten it, too. It, right? Remember it? You remember Dean Kamen's it, the mysterious it? Well, finally, probably because you're forgetting it, Dean Kamen is going to reveal it, I understand, Ginger, or it, to Diane Sawyer on December 3rd on the Good Morning America show. And maybe having received all of the publicity and fervor that was created about it, now it's time to reveal whatever it is. What do you think it might be? I've lost faith that I know what it might be. Here's a really interesting article that will confirm what I thought and what a lot of you have thought. MSNBC writes the article, and it's entitled The High-Tech Hunt for Terrorist Lairs. And guess what, folks? It, without reading you the whole article, it basically says the U.S. is using special new technology known as HARP from Alaska to look for underground caves and bunkers in Afghanistan and locate you-know-who. Did you ever doubt it for a moment? I mean, if there was a technology that would uncover underground caves and bunkers and hidey holes and whatever all underground, that was one of the original stated goals of HARP, and so you know darn well they're using it. I wonder what other interesting effects it might be having. They just discovered that under the frozen surface of the Arctic Ocean, this is a Reuters news story, scientists sailing aboard a U.S. Coast Guard icebreaker have discovered a searing cauldron of activity, including underwater volcanic movement and deep-sea hot springs that may harbor previously unknown forms of life. Isn't that interesting? One of the areas left to explore on our globe is the ocean, the deep, deep ocean, and under the Arctic Ocean there appears to be life. I wonder what kind of life they're going to find there. The scientists mapped and studied the Gackle Ridge. This apparently runs for about 1,100 miles from north of Greenland to Siberia beneath the Arctic ice cap. It is the deepest, most remote portion of the global mid-Atlantic ridge system. And oh, what they're finding there. It's really, really, really interesting. Black smoker chimneys. These are volcanic vents at the bottom of the very deep ocean, and around them grows this strange, never-before-seen life of some kind, I guess we're going to find out. Almost like going to another planet, very close to going to another planet. Here's a kind of an interesting story. The September 11th attacks apparently have spurred a baby boom. The words came to Ann Travers as she watched her husband sleep that night. He's going to make an excellent father. And there it was, the answer she'd been searching for, her personal response to tragedy after walking out of Manhattan and turning to watch the World Trade Center collapse. Little more than 10 days later, pregnant. Not long after, so was Stacy Stapleton, who made the decision with husband Paul to have a child as fighter jet crews flew over their Manhattan apartment. In other words, in the middle of this tragedy, Americans were so shocked and emotionally at a peak that many, many, many of them have made babies. Not quite a war boom, but pretty doggone close. So you watch, 9 months after the September 11th period, there are going to be all kinds of birth in America. I wonder what this says about us. When faced with our darkest moments, I guess on the light side, on the bright side, we could say we turn to each other. Right? We cling closer, much closer than ever before to the one near us. And of course, other things could be said that I wouldn't say, but if for some reason, when the when it gets rough, when going gets rough out there, people get going. Anyway, open lines. Anything you want to talk about for the balance of this hour, and then coming up next hour is James von Prague. He is a man who speaks to the dead. All right. To the telephones, and anything you would like to talk about in the world, remember, when I answer the phone, that means, boom, you're on the air, so turn down your radio right away. If I say, hi, you're on the air, turn down the radio, boom, like that. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay, sir.
Yeah. Is this Art?
I'm the only one here.
In the other room, I have to turn it off, okay?
Yes, please. Yes, go right ahead. Oh, wait. See, this is why. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I can't believe I got through. First time I ever tried.
See?
Yeah, I've been listening to you for about 8 months. My my cousin put me on to you.
Wait a minute. It's coming to me. It's coming to me. Something's coming to me. You're north, right? Yep. You're in Canada.
That's right.
Ah!
That's right. I'm in Windsor.
It was easy, sir. It was easy. I can hear your accent.
Oh, is that right? I'm from Cape Breton Island originally.
Uh-huh.
Nova Scotia.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Anyhow, my cousin put me on to you because of things I've been saying. I was wondering if you had anything you could add to it. I've been seeing the same numbers. I know it sounds crazy, but seeing 11, 22, 33, 44, 55, 66, 77.
Keep going.
All the time.
Let's see how far you can go. 77.
Yeah. I see them all, double numbers. Coincidences in life, I guess it is. But it seems like it's happening.
So then you can only get to 77.
Well, that's pretty much on the clock type of thing I see it. I'll strike me to look at my clock, and every time it's...
One of those times.
Yeah. But
you know, what that is, sir, is it's called synchronicity.
Is that right?
Yes, it's called synchronicity.
Hmm. I see. But I had here's one weird thing, though. I went home on vacation for my sister's birthday.
Yeah.
Back in Cape Breton.
Mm.
And I've flown probably 40 times in my life. I love it. And for some strange reason, I had an awful fear of flying. And I let it be known down home. And I also had a fear of the number 11.
Mm.
This was in August.
Mm-hmm.
And now after that happened, I had people calling me from all over the country who were home for that wedding. Saying I predicted that.
Well, would you have been on that plane?
I had an awful fear of flying. And I got on my flight home.
Would you have been on that specific plane?
No.
Well, then I'm not sure that it exactly counts.
Yeah, but I
mean, your plane would have been cool.
People are perceiving that, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, your plane would have been all right. I mean, if you had been booked on that flight... And I think this is the key. You know, people say these things all the time. Oh, I was afraid of flying. If you had actually been booked on that specific flight and you had been so freaked out, you had canceled your flight for whatever reason and stayed home, then I'd be having some deep thought about it. But just based on what you told me, Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hi, Art. This is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut.
So what do you have for us, Bill?
Art, I have a fantastic idea for a great ratings grabber for your show. And that is, how about a show for, let's say, for about 10 or 20 minutes with me debating the caller JC on religion?
Now, why do you think that you're half of the, actually, you might be right. You might be right.
Could you get JC on the line now?
No, I can't. He's just a caller. Well, but you know, the more I think about this, actually...
Yeah.
The more I like it. If ever I have thought anybody deserved JC, it might well be you, Bill.
Yes, there's nothing virtually we would agree upon. He would be so shocked with all the erotica and pornography and X-rated stuff, adult, of course, adult material that I read, and all the delicious food I eat, you know, lobster and filet mignon that he can't stand and work.
Well, I have no idea how I could ever coordinate this. I mean, you're a caller, he's a caller. I don't know how to get a hold of either one of you. But if the opportunity should ever arise, trust me, I'd do it, Bill. I appreciate your call. In many ways, there's nothing I'd rather see. Well, you never know, Bill. It'll be in the hands of fate. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Art Bell. Glad to have you back. And
yes, sir.
Have a good holiday season. And this is Frank from New Orleans, listening on WSNB 1350 on AM dial.
Yes, sir.
One simple question. Remember a while back they were shipping all types of stuff down to Antarctica? Richard C. Hoagland.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Has anything ever been further discovered about that?
Yes. Nearly as I can tell, with all of the evidence that I have in hand, and it's a fair amount, it appears to have been, at least insofar as the injuries that we documented were concerned, it appears to have been an old-fashioned fight.
Uh-huh.
I mean, a roundhouse
fight.
Now, there may be something else well beyond that, of course, but what I have evidence of is that there was a fight.
Yes. Okay, can I put in a plug for one of your products?
Sure.
The Bayless
Clockwork generator.
Generator radio. My son gave me one for my birthday, and I love it. And it's not as good as the CC radio for different things.
Well, nothing is as good.
But I tell you, I can listen to you on five different radio stations now.
Not only that, but you don't even have to put a battery in there.
That's what I love about it. I can go outside in the daytime and...
That's right.
And I don't have to worry about running extension cords. You know?
That's right. I mean, if you've got light, you've got power, and you've got radio. And if all else fails and it's even dark out there, you turn the crank for 30 seconds, you get 30 minutes of radio. Sure, it's remarkable. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Yes, sir.
You're talking a lot about the poles and the North Pole and South Pole.
Yes.
I was looking at National Geographic, and there was a map in there. It was about some of the exploration of the North Pole back in about the 1830s.
Yes.
And there were two little crosses on this National Geographic map showing where the North Pole was in 1835 and where it was when they did the map around 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the magnetic North Pole has moved 635 miles?
Yeah, it does move. Sometimes, sir, it moves more than other times. We have seen it wobble as much as 10 or 15 degrees on the compass. There are times when it begins to wobble and get really, really weird. And of course, those times are when we're having geomagnetic storms. And if you recall last night's guest, he said that almost all, you know, he really verified everything I've ever thought, that almost all human behavior is to some degree affected by what goes on in the sun and the way the Earth's geomagnetic field is affected by the sun. It really is the source of all life and the effect on all life. And that's why I follow what goes on in the sun very, very closely. When we are having intense geomagnetic storms, as, by the way, we are now, people are a little more on edge. There's more crime. There's probably more war. There's probably more baby making. There's all kinds of A-class activity that goes on when the sun is really raging. And trust me when I tell you right now, the sun is really raging. Almost another X-class today. I'm Art Bell.
I've been drifting on the sea of heartbreak, trying to get myself ashore for so long. For so long. Listen to the strangest stories, wondering where it all went wrong for so long. Yeah.
nation's premier psychic, James von Prague at the top of the hour. It should be very, very, very interesting program. He's got a new book, by the way, called From Heaven and Earth. I just took a webcam photograph, which you can also see on my website a few minutes ago, holding James' new book. First time caller line, you are upon the air. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Bell. How are you tonight?
Just spiffy. Where are you?
I am in Las Vegas, not far away.
Just over the hill.
Yeah, I'm glad you're feeling better. I've got back troubles, too. I'm calling about what to do with Bin Laden. You know, it's difficult being an ex-philosophy major. I understand it's difficult to kill an idea. I think we should capture this guy and just let him babble on. I think that if he babbles on, he will...
You mean like actually give him press coverage, allow him to say what he wants?
I think he's already gotten about more press coverage than anybody could ever hope for.
But I'm assuming you mean in custody. In other words, we get him in jail and then give him access to the press. That's what you want to do?
Well, no, I'm thinking more like an Eichmann kind of a thing, maybe even in a trial setting kind of a thing. And expose him for what he is and let the world see what he's all about.
Well, maybe you don't think that would actually allow him to gather support for his own event, you know, to spring himself or whatever.
Well, to spring him, I don't think that he could. I don't think he could get support to spring himself. I think that at that point we would have to worry about being sure that the nations over there that are on our side are indeed on our side.
I don't know. Some lawyer would probably present to the judge the concept that his cave had been searched illegally and he'd be able to go free. Please, the special forces hadn't knocked, shown ID, something. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
This is Dave, WGE, 1360 Green Bay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I noticed after September the 11th that women suddenly, and I, on a scale of 0 to 10, I'm about a 4 or 5, and these women in my job, in my workplace,
yes,
suddenly became... very attracted to me. They were joking with me and talking with me more.
Now, do you think that, would you say that it is that you actually, in fact, became more attractive?
No.
Or do you suppose that the women, I don't know, facing the emotional trauma that we all faced, and you know, then the war and the danger and all the rest of it, just simply became more amorous. I mean,
yes, it prompted them. It prompted them. I am this. I mean, I am one way from beginning to end, and it was them.
Well,
it's a biological thing. I always thought we were more spiritual, but I'm beginning to wonder now.
Well, we talk a good game, but underneath it all, we're still what we are. And look, after every war, and even during every war, lots and lots of babies are made. I'm one of those Second World War, end of the war babies, you know.
I'm 51.
Well, so
yes.
We all are to some degree, and so there's something about war that promotes togetherness.
Yeah, isn't that strange?
I think you're right. I mean, we talk a good game, but underneath, the reptile brain is still alive and active.
Yeah, I think so. Oh. All right, thank you. You're a good man.
Uh-huh, and continue to be lucky, sir.
Good night, my friend.
Good night. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. This is Evelyn out in the Berkshires in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. I'm listening to show on 810 WGY over
in
Albany, New
York. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to your show tonight. And on the show the other night when you were talking about cloning, I don't know, you probably heard this, but you didn't mention it. From what I understand, they can get stem cells from the umbilical cord.
Yes.
And that would be such a good thing, I suppose, without going into this other aspect that they've delved into. And that was my comment. And
so you're not in favor of cloning?
I'm like you. I'm kind of like sitting on the fence.
Yeah.
I have some issues with it. But, I mean, I'm all for helping people. Of course, who isn't?
Well, there are a lot of people out there who send me emails and say, Art, you know, this whole discussion is so dumb because clones are nothing more than twins. Oh, how wrong they are. They don't even begin to understand the implications of what can be done with cloning. Twins are a natural occurrence. This means you could just take a little bit of hank of hair and a whatever, you know, and create another you.
Right.
A younger, but precisely another you. And then you could begin to tamper with the genes and make a smarter you, a dumber you, a servant you, an organ availability you. There are so many places that we can go with
your, answer me.
That's right. That's right.
I just check out Revelation 11:11.
And what would quoting it directly, what's 11:11?
No, I don't want to quote it. I wouldn't do that.
No, what's 11:11?
It just kind of when 9-1-1 happened, if you read it, there's a lot of reflection in that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, check it out. Thank you.
I'm one of your snail mail people, and when I get my gas bill paid, I will get a computer.
All right, for you. I'll bet computer sales have gone through the roof. I think two things are happening. A lot of people, I think, are suddenly opting to buy recreational vehicles and are traveling by ground and taking their vacations by ground. And a lot of people are staying home and listening to media like talk shows and, you know, television, whatever. Staying home, staying away from crowded places. It has changed a lot, hasn't it? West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Mr. Bell. How are you?
Okay.
I also had a question, well, not really a question, I just wanted your opinion on something.
Sure.
With the cloning.
Sure.
Having to do with the Bible, sort of, also, as the lady was saying before. I have a theory, the possibility of, they found the shell that Jesus Christ was supposedly buried in. I don't know if you heard about that or not.
I've done shows on it, sir.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Shroud of Turin is what you're talking
about. Exactly, and it had blood on it. Now, do you believe that it's possible that they could clone Jesus due to that blood and that being the Antichrist?
Yes. All right. Mr. Cordy, whom I'm trying to obtain as a guest, well, Cordy wrote a book about exactly that, a really, really, really good book. And I thought he would be, he's in Great Britain, you know, which always makes it a bit more difficult, but I thought he would make a great guest. And we are pursuing guests now on cloning. To imagine it's no longer in the future, we actually have done it. And the all we did was get a few cells argument is hardly even worth considering. Trust me, we are going the whole way. Since when humanity can do something, has it not done it? We are going to clone a full two-term human. And if it's not occurring already, it'll be occurring soon. No matter what they do with the laws, trust me, it's either happening or about to happen. And all they did was prove it's obviously possible. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Going once.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air, sir. So turn your radio off.
Okay.
That's number one.
Okay. All right, here it goes. It's all up there.
Good. Now proceed.
Yes, Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Yes, first-time caller.
Welcome.
I would like to give you. I would like to discuss the what type of punishments we should impose on Mr. Bin Laden. Let's study the options.
Okay.
If we kill him, he's a martyr.
Sure.
If we don't kill him, he's a hero. So if you take into account the maltreatment of the women in Taliban's society and the how badly they've been persecuted,
yeah.
I think if we capture Bin Laden, I think we should give him a complete sex change and send him back to the Taliban society as a woman.
Yes, I've heard that.
See
that's
how
that's
it would
good.
Feel
that's quite
to
good.
Be treated under his mandate.
Either that or take him up to the stadium, the famous stadium where the Taliban used to do its executions, and have a women-only night, and just sort of leave him there.
Well, that's a good idea also.
I think it would be in their hands, not ours. And it would be the women who do the job.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and they would. They'd do a job on him. Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. I think that would be complete justice there.
I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, sir. How are you this morning?
I'm okay.
This is Dean calling from Tampa, Florida.
Yes, Dean.
Yes, sir. I just had a question for you. In fact, I've been listening to talk radio since actually I turned you on in 1995 in Anchorage, Alaska, and then I started calling shows in early 2000. And this year, I actually, down here in Tampa, I just started doing a public access television show. And my question to you, sir, is I almost got into the point where there's so much out there that every day, you know, each story, we get just a whole new plethora of things to talk about. But one of the things I found, and my question to you, sir, is do you sometimes find, suddenly you look up at all the different things you want to talk about and you think to yourself, where's the love? Where's the positivity that we try to promote? In fact, I even implore people to even call my show and say, if you have anything positive you can find in the newspaper.
No, I almost never say that.
Well, and it's not so much I look at the negative, because there was a lot of things that have come out from September 11th that is positive, and I think that is one good thing, but I think sometimes the print media tends to almost get in a sense where we almost get in a point where it's hard to find.
No, I'm being dead honest with you. I almost never look at that. Occasionally, but the fact of the matter is there's not a lot of interest in that. You know, and what people are interested in is pretty much salacious and, you know, the wild stuff and even the darker side, and I'm no different than anybody else. It's just that I admit it. So you're to be commended. I mean, if you know you're going out and you're looking for the love stuff, have at it. It's not easy.
Well, and it's not so much the love, sir. It's more like just to find the good news mixed in with the news that we get every day regarding either our safety of the anthrax, the war.
Well, ask yourself this: why do you think there isn't a lot of good news that makes it to the news? Why do you think that is?
I think because of what you just said, sir, I think what really sells is the things that actually, when you start looking at our news programs, they're almost looking like entertainment programs these days.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at headline news. I mean, my God, it looks like Entertainment Tonight now. So.
Well, they're not quite there, but they have made a bit of a movement in that direction, haven't they?
Yes, they have, sir. Have a good night, sir.
You too. Have a good night. And, you know, I admit it. In my private life, there's all kinds of good news, and there's all kinds of love. But yet, the things that interest me, if I watch TV or I watch the news, and I do that constantly, I'm a junkie, are the negative things. And I guess I'm not going to make an apology for it. I don't think that makes me any different than anybody else. You know, you want to know what's going on out there and the wild stuff that is going on. You want to know about that. The jaw droppers. There's plenty of those going on. No, I'm no different than anybody else. But there are a few out there like that man. Bless his heart. Looking for the good. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art.
Well, good evening to you.
I'm a long-time listener. I've been listening to you for a couple of years.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm just down the road from your home ranch up here in Medford.
Oh, in Medford, Oregon, where I hear it's raining cats and dogs.
Yes, it has been.
And if it gets any colder, it'll be snowing cats and dogs.
Well, my heater keeps coming on, so I think so.
Any idea where the expression raining cats and dogs might come from?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I read all kinds of junk, but I retain it.
Well, then help me out here.
Well, apparently during the medieval era, they would have so many stray cats and dogs in European cities, and then, of course, they weren't looked after. When they died, they would find some place to curl up, and when it would have a real, what we call out here, a gully washer, It would wash them into the street, and people would say it was raining cats and dogs.
Oh, son of a gun. That's awful. But
yeah, it is.
That is an explanation for where it came from, because the cats and dogs are running down the gutters. Oh, yuck. All right, well, sorry I asked, but glad I asked in another way. What's up?
I have an idea, and I've floated it with a couple of friends, and they said they would be willing to join it if I could get it started. Mm. And not generally to...
Is it a pyramid scheme?
Oh, God, no.
All right,
not to make anybody any money, anyway.
I see. What then?
Well, it's pretty clear to me that civilization, according to the Southeast Asians, I agree with them, is cyclic. It rises and falls.
Yes.
And I'm not saying the world's going to end tomorrow, next week, next month, 2012, whatever.
But eventually.
eventually. And I think it would be a really wise idea to start clubs, call them primitive survival societies if you want, where whole families would learn primitive survival skills. And primitive, colonial American type make do, like how to make soap.
Well, ask yourself this. If some calamity befell the world, who knows what it might be, all right? We won't even consider that. But whatever it is, it virtually drives everything back to the Stone Age.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, under those conditions, would you want to be alive? Back in the Stone Age. I mean, people are going to be dragging you off to caves by your hair, whatever all the stone people did. You know, animals are going to be eating them, or they're going to be eating animals, or, you know, they're going to be clubbing things. They're not going to have weapons. No TV, no radio, no modern conveniences whatsoever. Sleeping in the woods in the cold and the hot. Would you do that, or would you rather perish?
I would rather do that. People will survive, and if they have the tools, the knowledge to survive with, they'll be more inclined to want to survive. And it's just human nature. And it doesn't take the fastest, the strongest, the apparently healthiest. It takes the person who's determined and has the knowledge, those psychological tools, to make it.
And by percentage, as you consider the entire population of the U.S., how many people do you think, percentage-wise, would feel or do feel the way you do?
Probably more than we think, because I just did a thumbnail, would you be interested, and I tend to go for the so-called wacky things anyway, so I've gotten quite a few people that, when I broach the subject, would go, yeah, I'd like to do that, and, you know, we already have some people doing similar things,
muzzle loaders. Well, it doesn't exactly put you in the mainstream. You classified yourself as pretty weird.
Oh, yeah, but that's okay. I enjoy being weird, and people realize that.
So you'd be a survivor cave woman.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, we like to look down on our cave people ancestors, so-called cave people,
and they really had
complicated societies.
Listen,
and,
I'm sure they were great people. But
oh, yeah.
They had
it
life a lot different, and there's a lot of people in this country, if I don't have a dishwasher, I'd rather be dead.
Well, I'd like to have one, but I can't afford it.
No TV. Take my life. You know, they're so attached to modern conveniences that to be literally thrust back to the Stone Age when it was all gone, they'd rather be dead, but not you.
No, I don't think so. I mean, although today was really fun because when I woke up, there was no power, and they finally got it on, and it was on for an hour, and it went out again. And the first time it went out, I thought, "Well, crap! There goes civilization." And when it came on, I said, "Oh, it's back! Hooray!"
Well, then you're a great one to ask. When your power goes off in your home, luckily for you, I guess it was daytime, but I mean, virtually your home becomes a tomb, doesn't it?
Sure does.
People don't realize how much they depend on power and how much they would miss it if it were gone. I really thank you for the call. I've got to go.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, take care. James von Prague is coming up. He's got a brand new book called Heaven and Earth. He is probably America's premier psychic, man who talks to the dead. He's an incredible guy. So, phone connections allowing, James von Prague coming up next. Don't touch that dial. Von Prague is arguably the single most famous and successful spiritual medium of our time. World renowned for his extraordinary ability to communicate with spirits of men, women, children, and even animals who have died. His lectures, demonstrations, and spiritual tours have drawn thousands of people in the U.S. and well abroad. He's been a featured speaker on Oprah, Larry King Live, countless other TV and radio shows, including this program, as well as being interviewed in the New York Times, People Magazine, just about everywhere, really. A television miniseries is being produced based on his first book, Talking to Heaven. This CBS special will star actor Ted Danson and is scheduled to air in February of 2002. Von Prague is also in production for a new TV talk show, Beyond with James Prague. So he's got a lot going on in his life. In a moment, he'll share it with us. James Von Prague. Welcome to the program, James. Great to have you.
Thank you, Art. Great to be back with you.
Boy, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been about, maybe close to a year.
And so now you're doing all kinds of stuff. You've got a special coming out?
Yes, I have a miniseries actually coming out. A four-hour miniseries of Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen, his wife, Jack Palance, Queen Latifah, and Diane Ladd.
My, my. It's going to be what? The story of your life?
Well, it's going to be the story of how I began to become aware of my psychic ability and my intuition, you know, my whole ability to communicate with spirit. And then it goes into the last part would be based upon one of the readings I did for someone where it actually turned out to be a lady who came to me who assumed her son committed suicide. He came through and told her, no, I did not commit suicide. I was murdered by my best friend over a bad drug deal. And he came through and gave her details, the name of the person, and all these incredible things. She went and checked with the police. They got this guy. He admitted it. And now he's behind bars.
Huh.
This is amazing.
You know, now that you're as far along in your career as you are, James, how does it feel? Do you have regrets about your abilities and what you've done with them and the way, you know, would you change anything?
No, actually, I look back and I think, no, you know, when I first started doing this 20 years ago, my mission, I felt, and my promise I made to myself was to get this awareness, this understanding of life after death that we do live on to as many people as possible, to educate people, enlighten people with this knowledge. And the TV shows and the lectures, the books, it really brings it to that mass level. And I think it's wonderful. I think it's just incredible. I can't tell you that, you know, thousands and thousands of letters I receive from people who say their lives have completely changed. Their perspectives of death has changed. And really, it's changed their lives here on this earth for the better, too.
Well, you know, James, there's a lot of people that say this is baloney. You can't talk to the dead. When you're dead, baby. That's it. And people who claim to talk to the dead are full of it or playing tricks. They say that. Some do.
Oh, sure. I think that in every single field, you have people who don't have integrity and are not real, if you will, genuine. But I think that's a blanket statement, and I think people really need to explore those who do this and realize that, number one, energy cannot die. You cannot kill energy. Energy is transformed, and, that's really... I find people who say that, as well as people who say, oh, you're evil, you're of the devil... really just ignorant, that they really don't have the knowledge, or they haven't had the experience of a reading in a session.
What about those who claim it is written so in the Bible, that, you know, when you're dead, you really are dead, and until the appointed time comes, you're not going to be talking to anybody or rising or whatever?
I think the Bible is a wonderful, wonderful book of some tools and of truth in the simplest form. But I think, unfortunately, the Bible has been written by man, and it's man's interpretation of God.
Yes.
So I don't put a lot of credence in that. And also religions, I think the religions are very important because I think every single religion has bits of the truth, but not any one religion is all the truth. And I think religions have come about through the power of man.
Can you remember, James, the very first time that you had a communication and realized what it was?
You know, when I was a child, I used to see spirit all the time. I used to see colors around people, you know, which now, of course, are the auras, lights around them. I used to see forms around people. I thought every child could do that. Every child could see things and feel things and hear things. And the weird thing is I would know things about people as soon as they walked into a room. One of the things I talk about in my new book, Heaven and Earth, what I talk about in there, as a child about 10 years old, I was going to a store. It was like a delicatessen back in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember with some friends of mine, they were waiting outside for me. And I was going out the door, and this man pushed it inward. He was coming in. And as soon as I saw this man, I felt a terrible, terrible feeling. And I saw gray color all around this man, with gray mixed with black and very dark, and it felt horrible. And 2 days later, we read in the paper that this man had robbed that delicatessen that day. That was one of the first experiences.
So, but he didn't get killed, right?
No, he didn't get killed. He was alive.
Okay, so then you were reading his evil intention.
Sure, I was feeling his energy. But one of the first experiences of spirit, well, I mean, there's so many as a kid, but, I mean, one of the ones I recall, I was with some friends again in school, probably around 8, 9 years of age, and during lunch we went to a cemetery which was close to the school, just for the heck of it. Just, you know, kids will do these sorts of things.
Right.
And we're sitting under a tree, just hanging out and playing, catching ball or something, and I looked over to the far end of the cemetery, and there were two little children, I would say around 4 or 5 years old, just running around this tombstone. And I said, hey, you guys, look at those two kids over there.
Right.
And they said, what two kids? And I said, look, those kids are playing over there. I said, what are you talking about, James? You're crazy. We walked over there. As we walked over, I didn't see the two little children anymore. We looked at a tombstone. They were playing around. And it was a brother and sister who had died at the age of 5.
Oh, this brings on a very big question, James. I've got some people that come on periodically who are recording electronic voice phenomena.
Oh, I've done it.
You know what that, you know what that is.
Oh, right? Yes, I've done it.
And they frequently, I mean a lot, they go to graveyards and they get a lot of electronic voice phenomena at graveyards. Well, you know, the clear implication here is, and by the way, they get a disturbing number of children. They still don't understand why, but they get a disturbing number of children's voices. It's really eerie to listen to. And after what you just told me, my question would be, you know, whatever we think of the afterlife, I wouldn't want to think that I'd be hanging around my gravestone, my place of interment, or my ashes, you know, should I be burned or whatever. I just don't want to hang around the place that I'm disposed of, so to speak, and it just doesn't seem like a likely afterlife to me, James.
Completely, completely. But you have to realize that you are what you think, so you are what your mind has created and what you believe. So, for instance, if you believe there's an afterlife, you will go to that place where you believe. If you don't believe in much of anything, you'll kind of stay put because your mind hasn't placed you in a place. I find that those people, and also I'm going to talk about esoterically, when we talk about the spirit leaving the physical, they find that cremation is the best way because in some way it burns the magnetic ties one would have to the physical body. And also they say that the spirit cannot come back into the physical body.
It burns the magnetic ties?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I've got to think about that one. Is that really necessarily a good thing?
I would think so. It helps the spirit realize that they're no longer on the physical level. Also, this is very interesting. The Catholic Church, of course, who used to know all the true esoteric studies, and they used to study it themselves, they're very involved in metaphysics. What they did in olden days, for a dead corpse, they used to place a candle at the foot of the body, at the head of the body also, and really that was because the spirit would then not be able to re-enter the body. It usually enters those two ways.
Huh.
Is that interesting?
It's a little worrisome. Why would a spirit re-enter a dead body? Now, that really is going to creep me out. Why would a spirit want to do that? You know,
again,
to me, on the other side, we've got Raiders cheerleaders, we've got endless beer, we've got radio, we've got all the cool things that I love in life. My wife would be there, of course. I mean, on and on and on.
You bet.
Even my car, it would be there, too.
You could have anything you want over
there. My firewood would have to be there. But it definitely wouldn't be, I wouldn't be interested in squirming back into my deteriorating, rotting body. I mean, please.
and usually people aren't. The feeling people receive and the awareness they have as soon as they leave that physical body is, oh, gosh, I'm great. I'm glad I'm out of that thing. It's like a worn-out pair of shoes. I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
And that's why they would do that. There have been people also they've done that where there are other spirits looming around who would not come into that body. They've done it for that reason.
But so many in graveyards, it really suggests that there are an awful high percentage of people who
aren't aware that they've passed over.
Is that what it is?
That could be part of it as well. That could be part of it as well. There are many people, you know, it's such a natural effect, Art. It's such a natural transition.
But hanging around a headstone with your name on it and some dates, you know, that's a clue.
Scandinavia.
It just seems like such a horrible fate.
Well, I also think that they don't always necessarily stuck there. They can be in other places as well, but they go back there all the time. Just like they visit us all the time around us on this physical earth, around our houses, or, you know, different places we used to be with them.
Since you talk to people on the other side, you ought to have a rough idea of how many are thusly stuck.
Right. The majority of people are not stuck, but then there are those that are stuck, just like on this earth. There are many who are stuck on this earth, ignorance, hatred, darkness, and then there are many who are enlightened and aware. So, I mean, it's very true on this level as well.
When were you truly certain, though? I mean, seeing auras is one thing, but when were you truly certain you had the ability to talk to dead people?
Well, it's very, very funny. As a kid, like I said, I used to be very aware, very psychic, very in tune. I used to see spirits all the time.
Sure.
Even to little haunted houses. I guess as kids, we had this one place called the Bell House in New York. And it was supposedly haunted. And we went there. And I remember we went to the house, looking around, it was an abandoned house. And I walked into one of the rooms, and I saw people dancing. And it like ballroom dancing.
Wow.
And they weren't there physically. They were spiritually. And I would tell my friends what I was seeing. And we went upstairs to another room, and we found all these photographs in this room, and there were people actually in this very similar situations showing them dancing at nightclubs and this sort of thing. Very similar. And one of the faces on that photograph was one of the spirits that I saw in the ballroom downstairs. And that was, again, as a child. When I got older, I'd say I closed down, just like most of us do around the age of 9, 10, 11. We become conditioned by society and believe in, you know, those sorts of things which were taught.
Sure.
And in my early, and I had no belief in that about life after death. I didn't believe in spirit communication, and I didn't necessarily believe in psychic phenomena either. Until I'm in my early 20s, when a friend literally drags me to a medium, but I didn't know what a medium was. And as soon as I walked into that room, this man looked at me and said, "You're a sensitive. You're a medium. You will be able to communicate with spirit in a number of years. They're going to use you as a messenger." I thought the guy was crazy. But he proceeded to tell me things about my family members and who had passed over, names, details, that nobody knew but myself and those people. And that was the beginning. I read up as much as I could on the subject. And most of the books I read talked about meditation, going within, going into the silence, communing with yourself, your inner voice.
So is that how you proceeded?
That's how I proceeded. I began to meditate, and I'd say within several months as I was meditating, I began to hear voices again, as I did when I was a child, and I began to see spirits around people once again, like I did when I was a child. So that was about 21, 22 years of age.
You know, normally if a child were to tell friends or family, most importantly, they were seeing these things and hearing these things.
What do they say?
They'd be off to a psychiatrist.
Well, or they would tell kids, "Oh, that's your imaginary playmate." Where I believe that most kids probably do see spirit because, number one, they're closer to that world because they've just come from there most recently. So that's where their mindset is. Yes, there could be imaginary playmates as well, but I think a large majority are spirits that these children are seeing.
Well, I don't mean to be rude, but has anybody ever suggested to you at any point in your life that you see a psychiatrist, that something was really wrong?
Actually, I suggested I went to see a psychiatrist.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I didn't believe in it. I mean, I didn't necessarily believe in these sorts of things. But what happened was I was bringing through this information from these spirits, and the information was validated by the person I was reading every single time.
Uh-huh.
So there's the proof right there. The proof is in the message. The names and the, you know, and the first one I did was I was working at this job. So funny. And I looked at this girl and I said, "Now, this might sound crazy to you, but you mind if I ask you a question?" And she goes, "No, of course not." I said, "Do you know someone named Helen who lived in Idaho in a white house with yellow shutters?"
Oh.
And she said, "How come you're saying that?" And I said, "I feel impressed to say that to you, and I know it sounds bizarre. Please forgive me." She said, "Well, no, it's not that, but my grandmother, my favorite grandmother who raised me, lived in Idaho in a white house with yellow shutters, and her name was Helen." So that was the very beginning.
Well, you know, James, I've never been with you one-on-one, for example, in my living room or yours. You
right,
know?
Right.
But a good friend of mine is Danion Brinkley.
Oh, yeah.
And Dan I have spent time with. And Dan, he's a wonderful guy. But you don't want to spend a lot of time with him because
that's for
he
sure.
absolutely freaks you out. I mean, yeah. he will start describing things cars in certain locations, what's going on right now. He will tell you what's going on hither and yon. And it's unnerving. I mean, it's just not, I don't want to say it's unpleasant, but in some ways it is. It's absolutely unnerving. Do people react that way around you?
Oh, all the time. All the time. I react that way around me. When I bring through messages to people, I mean, it always blows me away, too, because, for instance, I was in New York 2 weeks ago, and I did a lecture for 500 people, and one of the readings that came through, I said there's a young man here who's a brother who died, and they had the same birthday one day apart. The man in the last row of the auditorium raised his hand, that's me. I said, your brother's here, he's giving me the name Constance, that's his name. And he went on and on all these details, and this guy stood up and goes, I don't believe in this sort of thing. And the brother said, well, I know you don't believe this, but I'm going to freak you out right now and make you believe. He proceeded to tell this guy how the left wheel on his trailer carrying the boat fell off on the freeway. He told him how he died, how his grandfather died, what was located in a trunk. I mean, detailed.
You're kidding.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And how did this fellow react?
It was hysterical. He backed up and he said to the audience, you guys, this stuff is real. Oh, my God. And went on and on. And what happened, which I thought was amazing, and he was great because he wasn't really open to this sort of thing. It was his first experience. Later that, 2 days after that, I had a book signing out on Long Island, all the way out Long Island. This guy went to that book signing to tell the people at the store who were sitting there listening to me that I was real and that this changed his life. So, you know, what can you do with that? That's what it's about.
All right. I don't want anybody to name any names, but you say you were in front of 500 people.
Right.
I've seen some movies about, I forget, some kind of Brother Love's Traveling Salvation Show or something or another where... Leap of Faith. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there was somebody backstage doing research on certain people in the audience, really fast running research.
Right.
Listening to conversations, microphones, all the rest of it.
Right.
How much of that in your field really does go on?
Well, you know, part of my job, which I have found that I need to do because of the, unfortunately, the falsehoods that go along with this line of work, I am like Houdini, where I go and I point out people who are trying to get over on other people. It's unfortunate that there are people in this field who have to do that, even psychic hotlines, that sort of thing. I have not personally encountered that degree of that. I have encountered people who do very general types of messages, and I really question that. Because to me, mediumship, I mean, a decent medium, you have to give details, I mean, specific details that no one would possibly know. I haven't encountered a lot of that myself. We know what I've encountered worse, though, Art. I've encountered people whose reason, their motivation behind doing this is different. Monetarily or power.
So not too many of the total frauds in the way I described. But then, there's another way it can be done, though, too. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about that. And that is, there's a certain way of having a conversation with somebody, listening to their responses.
Right,
and
cold reading, they refer to that
Cold reading,
that's
yes.
Right.
So let's talk
a little
bit about that.
I've been accused many times of that, too. So we can talk about that.
I'm sure. Stay right there.
With no peace of mind.
Here's an angel.
And I'm ready for the times to get better.
And her name is Crystal Gale. Waiting for the times to get better is the name of the song. I get a million requests for it. I'm Art Bell. Once again, James von Prague. James, so there is a way of having a conversation with somebody where you sort of lead them into a question, and based on their response, if you're just a basically intuitive person, you can sort of lead them into information that they think they're getting, right?
Oh, sure. I think it's a great, magicians can do that. I think wonderful. That's a wonderful thing to do. I mean, wonderful technique.
And magic, it's...
I'd say it's magic.
Magic, yeah.
Definitely.
Parlor trick.
Parlor trick.
But then there are the real ones, and I think you're one of the real ones. And so for you, there are all kinds of other questions that I have.
Well, I just quickly, Laura, if you don't mind, as a cold reading thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting when people just generalize, and I think that's very important that people realize that it is a generalization. Yes, there are some fake people out there, but there are also very genuine ones, as you said. And the cold reading thing with me, they said over the years, what do you say to people who bring information through about spirits that, or information that the person you're reading has no awareness or consciousness about that person that's coming through? For instance, I was sort of reading for someone, and this man named Michael came through and talked about Ruth and talked about a lawnmower and talked about his death and stuff. This woman had no idea about these details, but someone extra wrote everything down, so it was not in her consciousness. It wasn't even in her awareness. She went home. It was her neighbor down the street whose son named Michael died.
Oh.
He used to fix lawnmowers, and all these details applied to that woman. So it was not even within that lady's consciousness.
So sometimes you can seemingly fail, but you really have succeeded once the person thinks about it.
Yes, and part of the reason, as I said earlier, that man came from New York who came to that book signing also was because he didn't know certain things that his brother came through with. Went home and asked his mother. And it was so funny because he didn't remember about the wheel that fell off in that boat trailer. She did, and she had several many other things that she knew that he didn't even realize. So if you're doing cold reading, that would not apply.
Sure, sure. Most people, and I'm at the head of the pack, really want to know about the nature of the other side. Mike in Bedford, Indiana writes, or blast to me on the computer screen, would you please ask James what happens when an evil person dies? Does the evil go with the spirit? Does the spirit go to a different place? Is there really a hell?
Good question, and I need to send it out with this. They have to have the realization and that their conception of heaven and hell is not linear. It is not, as I say, black and white. It isn't, okay, here's a place over there, the third floor, we go there, we go here in the first floor. It isn't that way at all. It is what you create. It is what you bring with you. How you lived your life on this earth. Everything is energy, first of all. Every thought is real. Thoughts are real things. It's energy. You can't see the thought floating in space, just like you can't see radio waves or television waves or cellular waves or microwaves, but they exist on another level. So what you're doing in your lifetime is you're creating, if you will, an atmosphere around you. There are many dimensions. We're in a three-dimensional world. And what happens is, once your spirit leaves the physical body, you will go to where you are attracted to. Like attracts like. There's an affinity property. And you'll go to that, if you will, that energy level, which you have created, which you are naturally going to, based upon your thoughts, your words, your deeds.
To make the question clear and easy, where does a unrepentant axe murderer go?
Well, they will go to, I would say, a darker place, a place of being not in the light, if you will, a place of their own choosing. Many have described it as your own hell is what you created with your mind. And you will go to a place where there are other people who are just like yourself. And you have to hear and feel and re-experience everything you did in your life. So for some people, that's a constant reliving of the torture they gave other people.
Would that be for eternity?
It would be until that soul is willing and ready to forgive themselves and to forgive one another and ready to open themselves up.
And I suppose there is no way to measure in time terms that we would understand how long that could be or whether it would be forever.
That's correct, because just like on this earth, how long does it take someone to forgive themselves about something? Mm. For some, they forgive themselves right away. For others, it's a long process. Our prayers, that when we pray for someone, it helps them, because those thoughts of love, the spirit, will receive those thoughts of love, and it will help them to, if you will, open themselves up to another way of thinking. But, you know, Art, it's interesting, because just like on this earth, there are those who live in ignorance, who live in hate, who live in hell here, and there are others that don't. So it's
well, and here's a pretty interesting question for you. Last night I had Dean Radin on.
Mm-hmm.
From the Global Consciousness Project. And, you know, we were talking about the studies that they've done on prayer, and, oh, they have done some amazing studies on prayer.
Certainly have.
It mm-hmm. works. It's effective. It heals. And they've proven it with control groups. Scientifically, it works. Nobody knows how. Now, I asked Dean Radin last night, Dean, if we had two groups, One, very religious, with a great deal of faith, praying to God for somebody's return to health. And we had a second control group of atheists, complete atheists, but people who went into deep, contemplative, concentrating states and projected, you know, white light or projected whatever they wanted to project to heal a person. Mm-hmm. What difference would you expect? A totally honest answer. And he said, well, I might expect that the atheists would do just as well or better. How would you answer that?
I agree with him to a point. I would say, yes, they would do well. They would heal. They would have similar results, except I think those who have more of an awareness or consciousness with their prayers or with their thoughts, the quality of the healing would be better and perhaps faster. That's what I would say. It's the content of the thought. You see, every single person, like I said, and I can't get away from this, but it's true, everything is energy. And our thoughts, we're constantly creating. My belief system is that every single individual is made of that God spark, the creative spark, and that we are constantly creating with our thoughts. And we are really responsible for what we create in our lives. And we can choose how we want to create with that thought.
Good. Do you think we are all, in one sense, connected?
Definitely.
All right. Well, here was the other part of the Dean Radin business. On September 11th, there's been this ongoing experiment where they have scattered around the world these what they call eggs, and they're random number generating computers. And they look for non-randomness. They look at world events, things of great magnitude that have happened. And they look for these things to affect the random number generators so they become somewhat less random. And they can actually measure that. These eggs scattered throughout North America and elsewhere in the world mm-hmm. report back to a computer in Princeton, New Jersey, at Princeton. Hmm. And they noticed this incredible spike up out of the noise. All of a sudden, this non-randomness, there's a chart, and you can see this giant spike on September 11th. And guess what? It began 4 hours before the event, spiked during the event, and for a number of hours after the event. But it was astounding. I mean, just right up off the chart. Mm-hmm. The global consciousness reacting. But they began to react, James, before the actual event.
Oh, of course. Because we're not limited to this physical body, this physical dimension. We are more than just this physical body. I also have to throw at you this, which I'm sure you've heard this many times, that there are several bodies to mankind. There are several bodies to man. We are just aware of those in the three-dimensional vision. But we have several bodies at once existing on other levels, even though we're not aware of it from the physical point of view. So I would say to you that yes, indeed, they're aware of these things happening way beforehand, because you have to remember, outside of three dimensions, time is very different.
Yes.
There's no such thing as time in those dimensions. It's more like an event or experiences. I remember a year ago in November, and I mentioned this story, it's very important that for me, a year ago, this just a year ago, I was very depressed for 2 weeks straight. I was very depressed, and I don't get that way. And as I was feeling this, I was like, why am I this way? And I immediately felt there was going to be a war. And I felt the sorrow and the sadness of a lot of human loss of life. And I knew it would happen after Bush got into the White House. I knew it was going to happen. Not because of Bush, but that was my time frame. And I knew that would be on our shore, a lot of smoke and fire and glass. I didn't know exactly where. I knew on the East Coast, but I didn't know what city it was. I thought it might be New York because my family's from New York. But
Did you say any of this publicly?
No, I said it to a lot of my friends. I said it in lectures, but I didn't know what it meant. I knew there would be a war. I didn't know it would be explosion. I didn't know it would be planes involved. I just had that feeling. Which tells me, though, that the spirit world or those dimensions were very, very prepared and well aware that this event would happen over a year ago and preparing for it.
Well, it certainly does say something probably about time. about the very nature of time itself, that there could be this anticipatory reaction, then the event itself and the aftermath. The event and the aftermath you can understand, but not the anticipation. That was really weird.
Really, really weird. Yeah, time is a funny thing because time is so, you know, when spirits come back and communicate, it is so limited to this three-dimensional world. It's as if, you know, everything changes. When you close your eyes, your whole perspective, your whole reference point changes if you close your eyes. And you haven't gone anywhere. You've just changed your perception of things. It's very similar to time. When they pass out of time, out of the world of clocks and watches,
yes,
things take on a whole new meaning. And it doesn't seem that what you do tomorrow, the next day, they reference time from spirit by the experiences. They know it's Christmas time because they see you running around buying presents or cards or whatever. And there is, that is their way that they know that time is moving on.
Do you know, it's kind of a backwards question, but are you very aware of how they, meaning the dead,
mm-hmm,
see us? Do they see us in real time as we see each other, or do they see us in some very different way?
They see us in a very different way, as they see the world in a different way. It seems to me that when they leave the limitations of this three-dimensional world, there is an opening, an awareness, if you will, of the consciousness, and a larger expansion of consciousness,
uh-huh,
where they see the soul, not just in this lifetime, but many lifetimes as one. And they see the limitations they place on themselves. They see the lessons that they've come back on this earth to learn. They see the gifts that soul has, their strengths, their weaknesses. And I can't tell you, 9 times out of 10, they come back in the readings and communication, and they say, oh gosh, if only I knew now what I, you know then, but I know now. If only I loved more. If only I used that element of love.
Yes.
I could have brought so much more powerful things into my life, in my life, and everyone's I touched. They talk about that quite often.
All right. Bob in Minneapolis asks, please ask James about the interactions between dead humans,
yep,
ETs, and interdimensional beings. Being able to talk to the other side, have you become aware of entities other than human?
Oh, yes, indeed. I love people who, it's funny when I do these lectures, and people say, well, you know, this is it, we're dead and that's it, and we're the only ones that live. Really ones that are around say, wait, that's a little bit ignorant, because you cannot possibly think that we're the only life form there possibly is, and this is the only expression of life. I do believe, and I've been told, and I have experienced it myself, other dimensions, other forms of life, those who live in other places, outside of our galaxy.
Do they communicate to you in coherent ways?
Yes, I would leave. Now, the thing is, though, Art, you have to understand that I think they're form of communication is much more advanced in some ways than ours, or even off the board compared to what we can measure here.
Right.
I have had experiences when I was in Sedona, Arizona once, where we went out looking for UFOs, and we did see many of them, and at least there were a lot of different colors in that sky, and they were all seemed to be in some kind of systematic form, and I felt an energy all around me, different energies, and I started tuning myself to that energy. And I was told that these beings are from the Pleiades, these particular beings, and they said, you know, we don't understand the human beings. You have an element around you called love, yet you don't use it.
Huh.
And that was all they said.
Huh.
That was all they said.
By the way, what is it about Sedona and other similar areas that appear very, very powerful, special areas? What is it about them?
Well, my understanding, and of course I'm limited with this knowledge, but from what I've been told and what I've researched, that there seems to be some kind of mineral deposits in certain places on the earth.
Yes.
That seems to work with these, I don't know, the instruments that they're using, or they need these minerals, and they seem to be concentrated in these areas. And that's what I've been told. And I mean, that's what I've, from my experience and my research, I have found that there seems to be much more phenomena around heavy ore mineral deposits in certain places on the earth.
That would make sense. It surely would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to psychic ability, James, are we all created equal?
Very good question. I think that, and I write this in my book, I think that every single one of us is born with that sixth sense, our instinct. We have five senses, but yet now we have one more, the sixth sense. So we are all born with this sense of knowingness. Now, there are those just like who are born who can... Everyone is able to play the piano. Every single one of us can play the piano. But there are those that are born with a little bit more skill.
Yes.
And they become concert pianists.
Yes.
So I do believe there are those who are born with a little bit more sensitivity, that once that ability is recognized, that then they can develop that sensitivity, they can do higher forms, using it in higher forms of work with mediumship.
But most are not going to be psychic Picassos, though. Let's face it. I mean, there are people who can sit down and draw a beautiful picture.
Right.
I do radio programs, James.
Right.
If I sit down and draw a picture, you get stick people.
Right.
So I would presume that it applies to most things.
Yeah, there are talents, and I think that there are some who are much more talented in certain areas, but I do believe that everyone has an ability to listen to that inner voice and use their intuition. Look, everybody has a gut feeling about things. How many of us have kicked ourselves when we didn't listen to that inner voice at first? Oh, gosh, I should have listened to that. What? I would have been right. I would have been right. And that's what I'm writing about in my book.
I have allowed it to guide me through my whole life.
There you go. And you've done very well from it. And it's those who have listened to that inner voice have done well for it. It's, you know, when you get caught up with a rational judgment of the mind, the mindset, the brain, you're limiting yourself. And knowledge, knowing this, this intuition is limitless. It's God's language, the soul's language. You can't really confine that within the brain.
Well, then, we might extend this a little bit and say that people who just appear to have terribly bad luck, they make inevitably bad decisions, they go into debt, they get in trouble in their personal lives, their business lives, they're just a mess. They probably end up on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you think it would be generally true that these people would have inherently less psychic ability and probably never tried to develop it at all? And so they've just gone off in all the wrong directions.
Yes and no, not necessarily, Art. I would also say to that, there could be those individuals who are sensitive and are intuitive, but did not listen to it whatsoever, were not raised and conditioned to believe in that sort of thing. They were believed to with their mind and that the rationalization, their paradigm does not allow them to listen to that inner voice. I think that's more of it. You know, I think that's really what it is.
Well, however it happened, they don't have it, or they're not using it.
Right,
and
they do have it. They do have it. They don't listen to it. They have no relationship with it. They can't recognize it. I think that's more of it.
So then, if you raise a child to believe none of this, that it's all poppycock, then you are limiting that child in perhaps a tragic way.
You betcha, and that's what we do that every day. Our society does that. Because children that are born, they're all to use. They have nothing to use but their instincts. You know, they have nothing to use but their instincts. They know they're hungry because they cry. They know that if mommy holds them, they learn that that means love and attention, but they have nothing to use but instincts.
Okay, on the positive side of things, are we now beginning to become generally, do you believe, more spiritual and bringing that to our children?
Yes, I think that the consciousness of this planet, I do believe, especially the United States, I think is starting to open themselves up to the realm of possibility that we all are intuitive.
You see, so then things may be getting better. That's a bit of good news for tonight for that caller in my first hour. James von Prague is my guest. He talks to the other side, and we're going to talk to him about that this evening. Stay right where you are. In the dark, this is Coast to Coast AM. Eventually, we're all going back where we started from, I think. My guest is James von Prague, and his new book is Heaven and Earth, Making the Psychic Connection. Let me read a little bit from the back of the book. It says, for years, I've been teaching that death is not the end of existence, nor is it something to be feared. There is indeed life beyond this physical world. Earth is only one part of a vast, multidimensional universe. Spirit beings from other worlds are around us all the time. These spirits serve the human population in many ways as teachers, companions, creative inspiration, and protection. It takes courage to look beyond our three-dimensional world and know that something greater exists. The more deeply involved you become with the spirit world, the more your habits and conditioning will change, and the more your life will become focused. Let this book be your guide in developing your natural psychic gifts, to experiencing spirit contact firsthand, and to empowering yourself to live a better life. It is my desire that everyone experience the profound connection between heaven and earth, and that this book will help you do so. If you'll check my website and my webcam, you will see a smiling picture of me holding James' new book, Heaven and Earth, Making the Psychic Connection, where I'm sure you can go to a connection on the internet, say at one of these great book-selling discount places like Amazon.com, and grab it inexpensively. Again, James Von Prague, Heaven and Earth, and we'll get back to James in a moment. Once again, James Von Prague. Welcome back, James.
Thanks, Art.
I did. I took a picture, a webcam picture with myself holding your book.
It's, I have it right here.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Yeah, it's a really nice book.
Thank you very much.
What motivated you to move from your first book to this?
Well, you know, everything's a progression, and I've had for over, gosh, 20-odd years I've been doing this work. People have come up to me and asked me how they themselves can do what I do.
Sure.
And how they get more involved with their own intuition, and they have these gut feelings, and how can they recognize them, and how can they develop them? So I wanted to write a book to help these people to do it themselves, because, you know, I'm not the only one that can do this, and I think it's only an important or responsible thing to do is to share this ability with other people so they themselves can empower their own lives.
Well, some people ought to be careful what they wish for. Now,
that's exactly true.
There are negative aspects to what you do. I mean, there must be, on a personal level, if you see somebody and their aura is brown tending toward black, or, you know, obviously something horrible is going to happen to them, how do you deal with that information?
Well, I will usually, you know right away when I see them or
sure.
feel them also what's going on there.
Sure.
It depends on the situation that I'm with them, if it's a lecture or if it's a one-on-one meeting. If it's a one-on-one meeting, I will know right away when I meet the person and I see them physically, something's going on with them. If it's, it depends on the severity of what's going on. For instance, there are holes or leaks in their aura, because our aura, the electric magnetic field around every single person, really represents exactly what's going on with a person's spiritual level, emotional level, physical level, mental level. And if one of those are very unbalanced, you can see it. I mean, it'll finally materialize in the physical. What you do is you get this person, number one, to be centered. You have to. Most of these people who are unbalanced have no sense of being centered or grounded to this earth. Okay? And when you're not properly centered or grounded, your own being, you can let other influences around you and come through to you and be a part of your aura, attach themselves to you. Because like I said earlier, everything is energy. Everything is thought. And, you know, there are those beings out there who attach themselves to people, if you will. And
well, do you bluntly tell people? I mean, if you see somebody whose aura is virtually black, I mean, they're virtually doomed one way or the other. Are you blunt with them, or do you sort of try to help them in some lesser way than just laying it on the line like the doctor saying you have 2 weeks?
I couch everything that I say. I'm very responsible because I think they have to be. I don't want to scare anyone, but I want to do make them alert and aware of what's going on here. For instance, many of them will have no awareness that, you know, thoughts are real things, and that the people that I said, now many times I've had people come to me and they're very depressed and they have no reason why, or they have a certain illness and they don't know why.
Mm.
And, you know, I say to people, it's not what's wrong with you, because they come, what's wrong with me? Why am I so down? Why am I depressed? What's going on? Why isn't my life working? What's going on with me? What's wrong with me? And I say, you know, it's not what's wrong with you, it's who's wrong with you.
Who's wrong with you?
Yeah. Who have you had in your life around you? Who's been pulling you? Who's been on you? You know, and one has to have a very strong sense of themselves and work I do it on a daily basis, just reinforcing my own energy, my own spirit, my own sense of self, my own source of love of myself. And, you know, I go through a ritual every day where I cleanse my aura. Not only cleanse my body, but I literally will send out thoughts about cleansing my aura, the space around me. I call it a sacred space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a responsibility to do that, you know.
Well, as you walk down the street and as you observe people in mass at lectures or whatever,
mm-hmm.
How many of those people generally, percentage-wise, have bright, happy little auras versus those who are obviously troubled in some way?
You know, it runs a gamut, depending on the development of that person, their awareness. I have seen, mostly in spiritual groups, believe it or not, in many churches when I've been there, I've seen some wonderful, wonderful energetic people, beautiful colored auras. Their energy is very strong and solid. The aura itself, the shape of the aura is well oval, if you will. There aren't many tears, many leaks. But I've also run into that too in groups where I've seen people like that. The majority of people out there seem to be living other people's lives. And that's the worst part.
Well, I would imagine that deep faith would do that for you, wouldn't it?
Sure, sure, because it builds a strong sense of self, a strong sense of love of self, of self-worth.
Yeah.
And when you have a self-worth and self-love, that is where you get your strength from. That's where you get your energy from. And that's where you get, really, your protection from, because you protect that space around you. But when you're open to outside influences, when you have no sense of yourself, if you will, then you're totally opening up yourself. I once told this on your show, and I had a lot of mail from it, positive mail, where, you know, people have talked about, oh, he's not himself when he drinks, or she's not herself when she drinks.
Right.
You bet she's not, because she's opening up with all that alcohol. It's lowering the vibration of that person. And when you lower that vibration of that prana, life force, you open yourself up to those lower-leveled, unevolved entities.
All right, well, here's something then people can do. You say you can simply meditate briefly during the day or for a period of time and cleanse your own aura, force out the negative energy. Is that really right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that comes with the development of one's own intuitive responsibility for their self, their spiritual self. And it's an easy thing. What I do every morning when I wake up, when I take my shower in the morning, I cleanse my body, but I also close my eyes, and I envision a beautiful, if you call it, the divine light, the God light, the Christ light, whatever you want, whatever anyone wants to call it, that source of all, that unconditional love, entering the body to the top of the head, cleansing every single negative thought, imbalance, impurity, other people's energy out of the body, out of every muscle, cell, organ, and all around the space, and illuminate it and send it right down the drain.
Well, why don't some of you try it and see if it works? It really seems to, if I can actually, as we're sitting here,
yep.
I can sort of envision my aura, and I can sort of do as you suggest. I can begin at the top and sort of cleanse it, push away the negativity, and I can feel a difference.
That's right. And like if you did a flashlight, you envision a flashlight shining upon you and sucking away, as the light shines you, any debris which is not yours out the other end, and just going from the top of the head all the way down to the front of the body, side of the body, and the back of the body.
Okay.
You know, it works.
All right. Well, there's something people really can try.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You talk with the other side, all of us. I'm right at the head of the pack. We want to know as best we can, even though the references, I understand, are very different, what the other side is like, what we can expect. If the average person, you know, has sinned a little bit, right?
Right.
Or maybe more than a little. And they're probably worried about their future and where they might be headed. But assuming they generally make it as a C student here on Earth, where are they going to go? What is it going to be like on the other side?
First thing, let's back up what you just said, because I want to go that word by word. They worry about their future. They worry about where they're going to go. Okay.
Sure.
So now they're worried about where they're going to go. Let's stop that and start doing something about it right now. And how can they do something? Be conscious and be aware of their thoughts, of their feelings for other people, what they say to other people, and take responsibility for how you treat one another and how you think of one another. That's the first step. Let's say the average, I'm talking an average person. Remember, this is our schoolroom. This is the place where we learn experiences, we have lessons, we go through situations for soul growth.
That's why I said C student.
Yeah, exactly. The average person, exactly. Well, what happens at the time of death, and this is based upon many years of experience and thousands of readings and so forth, is there seems to be a natural transition of the spirit leaving the physical body, and you will see loved ones who have passed over. They'll either come by you there to bring you over, or they will meet you there in a hospital setting, depending on how you pass over, what the type of death it is. If it's more of a very debilitating type of death, like cancer or AIDS, something like that, you will end up in a place, you will find yourself perhaps waking up in some sort of a hospital-type setting.
Really?
To really gain back your prana, your energy, that which you have depleted with that illness. Because the spirit body is also depleted a bit from that. So what happens is you gain your strength. After you adjust, I would say, and again, time periods are different. Let's say it could be 2 or 3 days of Earth time. When you have a proper sense that you've left the physical and that you're in the spiritual, you will look around you, and the first place you go to is called the astral world. It's an exact replica of the physical world. You have trees and gardens, and everything's very solid. You have skies. You can have houses there. Everything of the physical that you recognize, per se. Now, at which point you will see loved ones or you'll see teachers, people that you recognize. It's usually people that you have had a loving relationship with the Earth. The most loving relationships you've had, you will see them right away.
And do you see them as you last remember them or as you best remember them? In what manner do you see them?
Okay, they will appear to you as you will remember them because that's how you can recognize them. So they will project that image to you. So you recognize them. But at the same time, we find that when people pass over, let's say the age 70, 80, 90, up in years,
right.
When they get to the side, they have the ability to go back to the prime of their life, the time that they liked it the most about themselves, they loved the most, they had the strength that they had, that they enjoyed. What happens is after you've adapted over there to your new sense of where you are, there is what's called a life review. Which, as Danny and Brinkley talks about this as well.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and what it is, again, because of the time properties and laws, the physical laws are very different there because it's another dimension. What appears on this world to be, let's say, a year or several years can be brief seconds over there. So you experience every single situation you had in your life, on this, your last life on this earth. You see it, you feel it, and you hear it. Not only do you do that, you feel it intensity, 10 times to 20 times more intense. And you, for instance, if you were very angry one day and you yelled at someone, you will feel how that person felt when you yelled at them.
That's what I've heard.
And you will have to relive it. And then you'll have to either rejoice because you did a very good thing with them and had a wonderful, you created a wonderful moment, or you have to forgive yourself for sending out horrible thoughts and horrible feelings. And one of the hardest things for us to do, even on this earth, is to forgive ourselves. So you can imagine if it's intensified in the spirit world,
yes,
how you feel. Now that could be heaven or that could be hell, depending on what you created.
Wow.
Interesting, isn't it? So there is a...
No, it's frightening.
Yeah, and thank you. And there is, you know, there's no God that sits in judgment and say, you go here, there, you go there, you go there. You judge yourself. And that we can be our harshest judges.
I'm already harsh on myself.
Yes, well, you're a Virgo, so, you know, critical of yourself. I'm a Virgo as well.
I'm a Gemini.
Oh, you're a Gemini. Okay. Well,
very critical. I analyze myself to death, and, you know, I've done a lot of things in my life I'm not proud of.
But you know what? It's a learning process. And you know what?
I know I've hurt people.
Yeah.
And having to face that is a pretty frightening thought.
But can I give you one helpful guide here?
Sure.
Just the awareness art. That you know you've hurt people brings you one step further.
Oh, I've thought a lot about it.
Just imagine people who hurt people who have no awareness that they hurt someone. No consciousness that they've hurt someone. Think of where they're at.
Well, you know, if it's like our legal system, they probably aren't held responsible.
Oh.
It's just those of us who know what we've done and feel it and feel guilt that now we're going to get clobbered. You know, we did it with premeditation.
Okay, so now you found also, you know, you've asked me before why I wrote this book. Now you found also part of my mission is to do this. Because I have this work, and this work is very powerful about life after the spirit communication, let's go to the next step. Yes, the validations that we do exist out of the physical world is extremely important. And once we've established that, let's move on. Now that we realize that, the next step is that we now know there's a life review. So once you have that awareness,
yes,
don't you think that'll force everyone to start thinking differently, how they react?
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Sure.
And live a different conscious type of way, living in an awareness?
Yes, and I think as you get older, that's a natural process that begins to occur anyway, right?
Totally agree. You betcha. You bet. And it's interesting because I think as a child, of course, you're very close to spirit. And as you go through this world, this school here, you go through these soul experiences, and as you get older, you're going closer back to spirit.
Yes.
So things seem to change in natural order.
Absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what is the difference in the nature of what occurs between those who are older and die a nice natural death and better, whatever, at an old age, and those who die at a very, very young age?
Well, from a soul's point of view, there is no such thing as time as we create time. For instance, it's all just experiences and what that soul needs to learn. Some souls come back with their blueprint, because I do believe we all have a blueprint when we come back on this earth. And I think that there are some souls who just need the experience of birth, and then they're completed. Or need the experience of 10 years, 20 years, and they're finished. Who need an experience of a tragic life, tragic death, for some reason. Maybe it's a karmic thing from a previous incarnation. Maybe their death, and I've run into a lot of this with children leaving their parents, you know, children who pass over, it's to teach the parents, in many situations, detachment.
Huh.
And guilt, getting over, learning to forgive, learning to deal with guilt.
So it's all karma.
It's all karma. It is all karma and soul growth. That's right. Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. So then a life, a human life could be, are you still there?
Oh, I'm still here.
Oh, good. All right. I heard something. A human life then could be, a child's human life could be existing for no other reason than to provide a karmic lesson for the parents.
Yes, because perhaps in another lifetime, the parents left the child.
That's some concept.
It's all balance. It's all keeping balance. And that's what it's about, is bringing back balance. That's what it is. So in another lifetime, you have to do something, so that brings back the balance. We also come back in soul groups, our families, our friends. We all decide to come back together to learn, because there's not only karma for the individual, there's karma for the group, there's karma for the country, there's karma for this world. There's different levels of karma.
For this country?
For this country, for this world, for different countries, and also for this earth, this karma. And just think of the karma we must have when we're destroying all the natural resources that we have, which is also forms of life, trees and plants and
That I really worry about.
The marine life, I mean, that's all life. You know, I love how man thinks that they're God, and they have the right to kill and change the natural state of things. I mean, that's some heavy karma, if you ask me.
And it may be coming back right now, all around us.
It certainly will.
Do you have any read on that? What lies ahead for us
You know, it's funny. I'm just thinking back. When I was on your show last time, I did discuss about a war, because you asked me about the future, and I said, there's something about a war. I have to look at the archives.
That's right. You did say
I
that.
I did. Though. I remember. I did say that.
Hold on, James. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. James von Prague is here.
Falling in love was the last thing I had on my mind. Holding you is the warmth that I thought I could never find.
Does, and then you need a hardened telescope to take a look at your star. All right, once again, James von Prague, and this will be very interesting. In his book, he talks about some dangerous stuff, psychic vampires, entities, other potentially harmful energies, and they are out there, right, James?
Oh, yes, of course they are, and one's got to be aware of that. Again, I think it's ignorant if you don't think there are other levels of beings instead of just those who are the compassionate level.
Ones that might not wish you well, necessarily.
Yeah, those are unevolved, and they're here. You know, people ask me all the time, you're afraid of talking to the dead. I said, you know what, I'm much more afraid of the living than I am of the dead. And it's true, a lot of them are walking this earth.
Well, all right, but
we've seen it September 11th, we've seen it.
Yep. Nevertheless, they are there, and
yep.
There are ways, I guess, to protect yourself from these energies. How do you do it?
Definitely, as we talked about before, meditation, number one, strongest way, is to, again, re-energize yourself and your power, and re-energize that power within yourself and around yourself, and become aware of the space around you. Become familiar with it. Have a relationship with what's going on around you. What does it feel like?
Well, the cleansing of the aura, yes.
Yeah.
There apparently are times when energies or entities are so strong that they occupy people.
Mm-hmm.
They do. They occupy people. And if something that strong is coming at you, there must be some greater force you can use.
Love. Love. That's really what it is, love. There are many techniques I do, and one of the ones I also do is when I scan the aura. And I start from the top of the head down to the midsection, to the bottom, and then I go to either side, the back. And again, it's really having a relationship with your space and knowing yourself. And you can tell when there's something foreign there, when there's something that does not feel right.
Yes.
And many times you'll get a visual of it. I've seen things where it's been, now this might sound weird, I'm sure you might have heard lizard people or snake people. Have you ever heard that experience before?
I have heard of them, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are those beings, many beings on different levels and different life forms, but there are those who sometimes don't even have human, they don't even look human. And I've seen those around people. When I do work like that, when I do, and I call it, you know, we call it exorcism. That's really what it is, I think. You extract that energy which is foreign to that person's natural space. And I do it visually, and I will send them, and I also call in my guides, higher level guides, the benevolent guides, and I have them work with them. I will try to talk with that being or that energy and see what they want. And I will send them back to their source with love.
Hmm.
It depends on the type of energy that's attached to the person, too, you know.
Well, that is a kind of exorcism, isn't it?
It is a kind of exorcism. But also you have to realize that the person who is attached to, they can be doing something that that energy is feeding on. For instance, we talked before about alcohol. This being, you know, psychic vampires, what is a vampire? Well, a vampire is known as someone that sucks someone's blood. What is blood representative of? The source of life.
Sure.
And there are those energies who attach themselves to your source of life because for whatever reason they want to re-experience things on this physical level. They want to possess one. They want to live the physical many times.
I wonder, James, and I wonder if you wonder, how many people in mental institutions across America actually are simply really inhabited and controlled by dark forces rather than have what we would consider classic mental illness?
I would say the majority.
The majority?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I would say, well, let me say 70%. 75%? I mean, I would not be surprised.
Wow.
Art, if it was to that level. I really also would not be surprised because, you know, many years past, they put mediums in these types of places thinking they were totally schizophrenic. Yet, they were just really sensitive people who were intuitives.
Right.
And they were just talking to a spirit.
Is a sensitive person who has not developed their talent more vulnerable to darker forces than the average person walking around oblivious to, you know, to these sorts of things?
I think they're more aware of it. They're more aware that these things attack them. I just had a friend I was speaking to this week.
Well, if they've developed it, but I mean, there are certain people out there with great intuitive ability who haven't paid attention to it. Or wouldn't they be very vulnerable?
Well, I think, no, not necessarily. I think everybody's vulnerable. I think you have to have an awareness and consciousness of it. The more conscious and aware of it you are, the more you can protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just walking around open, you know, and most of us, you know, it's so funny because the spirit world referred to us as the walking dead. We say they're dead. They say, well, you're the dead. You're the ones who can't see around you.
Uh-huh.
You can't see the truth. You can't see in front of you. And that's the way it is. But I think that people always have to be responsible. Again, every single day, I think it's so funny. This whole thing with 9/11, it's forcing people now to live life for the moment, where we should always be living life for the moment.
Big report on, speaking of the moment, big report on all kinds of pregnancies centered right around 9/11 and the time following 9/11. So people got close, all right.
Sure, they have to nurture each other. You bet. Love. Love, love, love. There it is.
Yes, sir?
That's really what it is. Love, you know, love brings together. Love combines. Fear separates. And that's really what it is.
Again, with the other side being so different and no time reference, still, I guess we want to know. You mentioned, you began to tell us that there was a sort of a lower or a beginning level where if you died of a, you know, protracted illness, you might actually wake up in a hospital.
That's right.
Or if not, you might wake up in a neighborhood or a house or with relatives or, you know, with worldly references around you.
Or Art, you might wake up, if you have a heart attack sitting in a chair, you might wake up or just be aware that you're standing up looking over your body and saying, what's going on there? And then you might have someone come to greet you who you know who passed over, a parent or teacher, a friend or whatever, and say, hi, what are you doing here? And they'll say, you're dead. What do you mean I'm dead? I feel wonderful. I feel fine. Never felt so better in my life. Yes, but you're dead. You've left your physical body.
and they have a hard time adjusting to that reality. So many times they're forced to go back to their funerals to really see that they've died.
Wow.
Because they're unaware.
I might just suddenly be still doing my show.
Yes, that's true.
You know, what I do every day, and my dad might walk in or something. I mean, who knows? Wow.
You know, it's something because this is so interesting. Because, again, of the time reference, and because the perceptions of things, and because we're forced into a situation, many times plane crashes, or even if a bomb went off, people would find that once they would see themselves in the exact same position that they were in, because that is the last memory that they have. The last memory that's registered is exactly as they were. So if a bomb goes off right now, you and I are going to be sitting here talking on the phone because that's what we remember. Until someone could walk in the room and say, no, you've passed over.
Okay, for a second, let's talk about 911. Let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
I had a an active New York police sergeant on the air who did a program with me just after 911. He went to Ground Zero, James, and he took photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be sensitive about this, but I want to tell the truth. What came out in the photographs, and we had them on the website, were thousands of orbs.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of orbs in that area, in picture after picture after picture that he took.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that brings up obvious questions about where thousands of people would have died quickly, unexpectedly, in something like this terror attack. Would those orbs, in your opinion, represent the souls of the people who died there, or a remnant of some sort of remnant that was close by and hangs around, or what were those?
You know, Art, you're really smart. You really are educated. It could be one of both. I mean, it could be a remnant of them, the astral body, the shell, if you will.
Yes.
And it could be the spirit body. I've seen it, and I've heard about this, and I've tuned in when that happened. I tuned into that area, and I saw there were a lot of people who were stuck. And when I say stuck, it happened so instantly they didn't know where they were. They didn't know what happened. So they would be there until someone guided them out of there into a new reality. So do you bet? That sounds very, very possible, and it sounds like that would be the way, actually, many orbs. Orbs are spirit lights, if you will. And people in meditation and development circles, they see these orbs all the time around.
Yes.
In their spirit. Spirit photography, they happen for years and years and years. You'll see orbs or shapes. I was just given one by someone in my family who took a picture of a man who died. My brother-in-law died, and it was his granddaughter's birthday. And my sister showed me this picture, and I was blown away because I've seen many spirit photos over the years. This one had him, his outline, including his sideburns of his head,
wow,
his nose and chin, and his arm reaching out to the granddaughter. A spirit form.
I would love to have a copy of that.
I'm going to get you a copy of that.
Are you really? I'd
yes,
love that.
I will get you a copy of that.
Yes, indeed.
It's the most incredible spirit photograph I've ever seen.
Oh, get that to me. So, do you have that in computer form?
I don't yet. I will get it from this week. I'm getting it.
Okay.
I'll make sure you have a copy of that.
I'm sure people send you all kinds of things like that. They've sent them to me, too, and I have seen some truly, truly remarkable ones.
Another one I saw, which a friend of mine sent me, was this boy. I guess it was a boy who was in a car accident. And this was taken by a policeman within about 10 minutes after this accident.
Right.
And when that was developed, you see the shape of the boy, and you see the shape of a dog, a little dog. And the mother said that his puppy died years before him, that he loved this puppy. And how that shape was that of the puppy.
And so there it was.
And it was defined very clearly as well. So no one could have, you know, done that, touched that up.
Is it possible, now, you, with everything you've said tonight, I would have to say you thoroughly believe in reincarnation.
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
You bet.
All right. If people reincarnate,
how can they communicate?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I knew you were going to ask that because I'm psychic.
Can't resist.
And that's a good question. And I would say this to you, that you're thinking of it again in linear terms. You're thinking of it in a limited way of the three-dimensional mind.
It's true. It's true.
Because, as I said earlier in the show, we are existing on several levels at once. So what is not to say that right now we're not existing in China, we're not existing in Russia, in South America, and that part of our soul is actually experiencing life right now as we're speaking in a different place, on a different level, maybe. So that personality, which we recognize right here, that you and I know, when that passes out of the physical body,
it seemed to be that personality which I'm able to still contact. I'm not saying that's not a part of the greater whole, because I think it is. So I think that that personality, if you will, grows into that soul, or blends back into that soul head, the soul, that soul center, and we build up from that.
So then, that makes the concept of continued consciousness, as we understand it, really difficult to grasp.
And that we're all connected. That we're all connected. Yes, and that we are always, if you will, interdimensional. That we're interdimensional right now as we're speaking. So they're existing, they're dead people, are all around us right now. It's interdimensional, if you will. Interpenetrating.
Are they very much more aware of us than we are of them?
You betcha. Yes, they are. And they see us not as solid figures, because you have to remember that the level of vibration that they are on now is a much faster rate of vibration than we are on the physical world. The physical world, the molecules vibrate or move very, very slowly. It's a very dense, heavy place here. The spiritual dimension seems to be much faster, much quicker.
So to them, we would be moving
exactly
very slowly.
And can you imagine them coming back on this heavy, heavy atmospheric vibration? It's like, oh my God, it's so heavy. It's like walking through mud. You know, but what happens is when they look at us, they see us as an energy form. They don't see us as solid per se, because their world is solid where they are at, their natural world now. So they can walk through walls here. They can just go right through us. Many times people feel chilled when they're around them.
That's right.
I believe that that's because their spirit is touching their aura, that they're walking right through them. And that's the sensation, the physical, how the physical responds to that. I have a very good ghost story for you, too, by the way.
Let's have it.
I know you'd love this one.
I do.
True, true story. I was about 3 months ago, I was going to bed on a Sunday night, just closing my eyes, and I noticed there was some energy at the end of my bed. Now, when I do my work, I usually have to really focus and meditate and get into a receptive state. For some reason, while I was just about to fall asleep, I felt this energy at the very foot of my bed. I looked up, and there was a man standing there.
Oh.
Could not make out exactly what it looked like, except I saw he had a very... he has a top hat and a coat. And I said, "Who are you?" And the impression I received was, "My name is Lincoln. You know me as Lincoln." And I'm saying, "No, no, no. Can't be Lincoln."
Lincoln?
As in Abe Lincoln. I'm that Virgo mindset, skeptical. Come on, prove it, prove it. Even me, of all people, which is very healthy, I think, with my work. And I said, "Prove it's you." He goes, "It is me. I am here to tell you you are going to continue helping to raise the consciousness of this planet." This is back about way before September 11th. And I said, "Why me?" And he said, "You are going to be reaching many people." I said, "Prove it's you." And then I said to him, "Tomorrow is Monday. If I see any reference to Lincoln, I'll know it's really you." The next morning, my editor sent me a part of my book, which is actually Heaven and Earth, this book. The last part was a question and answers.
Yes.
And one of the questions, what is a premonition? And the editor wrote in some answers and wanted me to embellish on them. So I hadn't seen the questions yet. I read over this paper, and it said it was a premonition, and I'm reading it, said, "A premonition is a forethought before something happens, just like the very famous deathbed scene of Lincoln." At which point I threw down the papers and freaked out. That afternoon, a friend of mine called, and I said, "How was your weekend? It was great. What'd you do?" He said, "Well, I was in Palm Springs," and he goes, "A friend of mine bought me a painting." And I said, "It was a very strange painting." I said, "Oh, what did it look like?" He goes, "Well, the name of it was Lincoln Freeing the Slaves."
Wow.
That afternoon, that night, I was cleaning up my dining room table. My wallet fell onto the floor. A $5 bill came out with Lincoln's head standing. Okay? Now, the next week, I was doing this mini-series of Ted Danson. I went up to Vancouver to watch him film it. They hand us, as we check into the hotel room, a cast sheet, a call sheet, and the times and so forth. At the very bottom of that sheet, there is a quote. And it said, "Man makes what he creates. Abraham Lincoln." Okay, four times.
That would be enough.
3 weeks.
That'd be plenty. Well, so then I guess it was Lincoln. Too bad you didn't have the opportunity to ask him what he thought about contemporary America right now.
You know, I want to tell you something. I think those beings who are enlightened in some way, and those who used to work in government on this earth, I think they still come back and they're around the governments around on this earth to help inspire them. I do believe they do that. I do believe part of their mission is to come back and help to inspire. I heard Kennedy is involved with that as well, and many other great, you know, I think great politicians and people, humanitarians, if you will.
When I don't know if I can get you to say anything about this because it's, I guess, in production, but the Ted Danson thing, when you are on the set and you're watching their screen version of you unfold, are there times when you're saying, yeah, dead on, and then are there other times when you're cringing and you're going, oh, my God, who wrote that?
All the time. All the time. I walked into one scene where they had me as a little boy, a six-year-old, seven-year-old boy praying, which I used to do as a child, and I could not believe how true it was. The wallpaper of the room, and they didn't even ask me about this, but there were things that happened where it was exactly the replica of my childhood. They even went down to the names of people in my childhood that were, they had their research. They couldn't even find it for the research. I mean, they got some incredible things. Then there were the other times where they took that dramatic license, and boy, it was pretty dramatic. But it's going to be a very big show for CBS. It's a miniseries, probably in February. CBS said it's the best miniseries they've ever made.
Oh, really?
I've seen. Oh yeah, I spoke to them today, and I've seen a piece of it. I've seen the whole 4 hours. It is one of the creepiest movies I've ever
seen. Is it really? I think that America really is ready for this kind of a story. I mean, you know, The Sixth Sense and all the rest of it, it's all proven. So
yes.
I think that the country is ready for it.
Oh, definitely. Why do we think we have bestsellers and movies and TV shows about spirit? Because people are ready for it. They're ready for the truth. I think inside every single person, there is that sense of who they are, the spirit first and foremost. And I think this stuff, even though it's just really bits of it, touches on that natural origin of who they are.
Well, then, as bleak as some things seem in the world right now, really that is a kind of a positive thing. There's a real spiritual renaissance going on, isn't there?
You bet there is. I mean, the consciousness of the planet is changing so much. You know, you can have me on your show 10 years ago talking. Well, maybe your show I could have. But many shows, they wouldn't even go near this type of thing. When I first tried selling my first book, Talking to Heaven, I cannot tell you how many publishers, at least 20 publishers, turned it down. They said no one would be interested in this sort of book. No one would want to talk to the dead. It's morose. Well, now look at it. They can't get enough of them. So, yes, there's definitely been a consciousness change.
Well, nothing succeeds like success, of course. This is to remind you of that photograph you're going to send me, right?
That's right.
All right. Hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour already. My, how time flies. I'm Art Bell. James von Prague is here.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Hold it on.
Now, James, there's no question about it. You're at the top of the heap of what you do. I mean, you're right at the very top, reputation worldwide. And I wonder, is it your view that the public, the American public, or the world's public, sorts it out pretty well for themselves? In other words, they seem to recognize and know instinctively, somehow or another, the real McCoy, and that they're able to really separate the wheat from the chaff.
To a degree. And then I think those who are embedded with fear and really ignorance, if you will, and I think those are the ones who kind of think, oh, they just shut it off to, oh, it's something else, it's something fake. And those, and also there's another segment of the population who's, you know, so embedded in their paradigm, their way of thinking, that they want no one threatening that way of thinking. Their sense of reality is their sense of reality, and they're not going to budge. So for them, it's hard to believe this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, it's a really interesting art. The majority of people out there do recognize truth. They recognize who's genuine and who's not. I think they have a pretty good Geiger counter for that sort of thing. And, I really do. I think... And you know, you see, you think you recognize truth, then you can recognize when people are coming from an honest point of view. I tell people I don't care if they believe this or not. I really don't care. They take it, they don't take it. Doesn't matter to me. I do what I do, and that's, you know, I think it'd be a sin to be given a gift like this or this ability and not use it. I think that would be the biggest sin.
Well, you know, you are obviously famous and well known for the readings, the incredible readings that you give.
Yeah.
Of being able to talk to people on the other side. Now.
Right.
When you come on a show like mine, and I don't allow you to do readings.
I love you for that.
It's kind of a break, huh?
I can't tell you. I mean, I did the Joan Rivers show today, and I mean, every 5 seconds there was a reading. But the thing which is awful about that is I was just tuning into that person. And, you know, there isn't a button you can push. And I was just getting information, and they had a change, the commercial break. And that's not fair to the person, you know, calling in or myself. So I prefer shows also where I can just speak to people, and they can ask questions they've always wanted to ask. And it's not personal in nature because, you know, everyone can be helped if it's a general question.
Sure. Okay. Well, here they come then. First-time caller line, you're on the air with James Von Prague. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you, sir?
I'm just west of Reno, actually. Pretty near you.
All right.
Great.
I have a question about cremation. I'm planning on being cremated. My wife and I are both in, have our ashes spread in our favorite places that we grew up. Does that make any difference as to, you say you feel things in graveyards. I'd be spread all over the place.
Because you're thinking that you're part of that, but you're not. That's the physical body. That's your shell, basically. You don't need that shell anymore. That just, it's like a car. You've driven around for so many years, and then finally the car breaks down and has no use. You have no use for that car. So you leave it, and you get another car.
Right.
And that's really the sense that the spirit has said that they have with the body, is it looks like an old, worn-out, you know, piece of shoe or
yeah,
a coat.
But you know, James, I'm still kind of attached to a lot of the cars I've owned. I have fond memories of them.
But you know something, Art? When you step out of the body, you're going to say, thank God that's over with.
Well, yeah, maybe so.
I haven't had one spirit come back and say, gee, I missed that body. I wish I could come back. It's just been the opposite. So, again, the mindset, cremation, and it's so funny because spirit will say, you know, why do you go to my grave in that cemetery and stare at the ground? Look at that. That's kind of ridiculous. I'm not that ground. That's my body. That's my shell. I'm much more than that. And
right.
It's a funny thing when you think about it.
So according to what you said earlier, cremation would prevent the occasional return.
Correct. And it seems that there's a very quick, if you will, burning of the magnetic ties of some attachment to the earth. If there is any such thing as an attachment that they might have, it will help that soul to adapt quicker to the new way of life, the new way of thinking.
So there you go, caller. I guess the word is burn, baby, burn.
Right.
So and go back to the earth. Return back to Mother Earth.
Yep.
You know?
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. That was actually a very interesting question, very interesting
good
response.
Question.
And I, too, lean toward cremation. I don't necessarily want to be lowered into the ground.
And just think of how much money is wasted on funerals and on all that. It's such a waste of money. And I can't tell you how many spirits have come back and said, why did you blow the fortune on my funeral? It does me no good. Funerals are for the living, not for the dead.
Mm-hmm. Wild card line, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hello.
Hi, good morning, James.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi. You mentioned earlier that spirits can rip or attach themselves to the aura. I wonder if you ever came across a situation like this. Let's say someone's fairly, you know, just coming into life, like in their 20s.
Right.
And it really isn't alcohol, or possibly could be alcohol or drugs, or maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, let's say, you know, they have the job and they're planning to get married, and all of a sudden there's this hit or this attack from something so foreign and alien that the thoughts in their minds aren't even theirs anymore, and they're thrown into this where they realize that from this moment on that their lives are going to be different. It's just going to be, how can I put this, that something has entered into them. They can still function,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
the marriage, the job, their whole life now is basically moment by moment lived knowing that there's another presence inside them, and everything that they've cherished is basically stolen away from them. Do you think, is this ever resolved on this plane of existence? Because you mentioned the cleansing of the aura.
Mm-hmm.
When all of that fails,
mm-hmm.
and you realize that you're basically living a life that's really not your own, from that point of attack, your life has now become going on to a different track that you have no control over. Is this ever resolved here?
Well, you know, again, it could be many, many things. Number one, it could be, I have to say that the possibility is not just spirit attachment. It could also be a chemical attachment. It could be a chemical thing. It could be something going on physically to the brain. There could be an imbalance as well. I mean, I can't say that a general statement that it's just a spirit attachment. Let's say it is a spiritual attachment. Number one, I think that person
has, number one, if they're aware of that, they're aware that things are very differently going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is the awareness that they have, so they can do something about that.
Well, that really was his question.
Yeah.
Will it last forever virtually, or is there a remedy?
No, I think that, I don't think it will last forever. I think it depends on the individual and how willing they are to change things, to get to know themselves, get back into their own space. It's hard to say, you know, I mean, so many people go around this world as prisoners to their world and prisoners to the people in their world. So many of us do. Again, I think it comes back to really going back within oneself, empowering oneself, learning how to get back to who you are, whether that's through meditation, whether that's through exercises, techniques of self-empowerment. There are ways of getting back. Does it last forever? It's hard to say, you know. Some last for several years. Some could last a lifetime.
Honest
answer. Each individual situation.
All right. Thousands of people are fast blasting me, and I've got to bring the subject up with you.
Good,
I think
we
talked about shadow people, didn't we? Did we ever talk about shadow people?
I think we might have last year.
Uh-huh. I have been overwhelmed. I had one person call on the show and say, you know, I used to see these things flitting about, sort of in the corner of my eye, just movement in a room where I knew there was nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting thousands and thousands of emails from people saying, I see the same thing, only guess what? Recently, I've begun to see these, whatever they are, human-looking creatures, but indeed creatures, just shadows, not full physical presences of anything, but kind of what they call shadow people. And I'm seeing them full on now. And I've had thousands of emails about this. What do you imagine these are?
Oh, there could be one of many things. Number one, it could be spirit. It could be that they're being aware of spirit. Number two, there is something known as the astral shell, which is when someone first passes over,
yes,
there's that astral world they go to, which I spoke about earlier. And you have a very physical body, if you will. It's an astral body, a very solid body. Then there is known as what is known as a second death, where you move out of the astral into a higher level of existence.
Right.
But that shell, that astral shell, which is the exact replica of the physical, still remains in that astral world. And I could, honestly, I have been told, and I've seen it myself, that some of these astral shells indeed are around the Earth. Again, it's part of that being that was here.
Hundreds of people have told me that these beings move incredibly fast. Mm-hmm. They are moving at a speed that has no relationship to the speed we move at all. And hence you rarely see them standing still, very rarely. They're just flitting like that, usually.
Right, so what you're describing, though, is a spirit, though. That's exactly what spirit. When I see spirit, it's exactly what I see. And they're fast and they're quick.
That's
they're
right.
In the corner of the eye, they
That's
come
right.
in. There'll come at times when you're sleeping, when you least suspect it, because when you're, or you're focused, reading a book, watching a movie, when your consciousness, your awareness is focused on one thing, you're opened, your awareness is open another level, okay? And you'll be more aware of those things around you.
But how do we know whether we're encountering an angel, a spirit guide, or something that would wish us evil?
I would ask. Go within, close your eyes, start a light meditation, and just try to adapt yourself to the energy that's around you, and tune into that energy. You know, every one of us, when we walk into a room, we feel something. When we meet someone, we feel something. It's exactly the same thing. In the book, I talk all about that, how you become aware of those energies around you, how you see them, how you feel them, how you hear them. You must practice with it because it isn't something you're used to doing. Your brain isn't used to conditioned that way on an everyday basis. But if you become aware of it and you learn to use it, then you'll be able to sense those energies exactly where they're coming from, what their origin is, and what they want from you. Or, you know, many times there are spirits who are walking around not even aware they're dead. And I've been spirit rescues where I've had to tell spirits they've passed over. Go towards the light, ask for someone who's passed over. You know, you send them this thought.
Right.
And I've done many rescues that way. And they were a lot of the shadows that I've seen around, those sorts of beings.
I had a young mother send me a photograph that I put on the website, and everybody saw it, of her son, her young son, lying in bed with this shadow being on top of her son with hands reaching up to choke him.
Oh, my God.
This was one troubled young man, and it was one troubled story. I had her on the air. She talked about it on the air and supplied the photograph. It was incredibly troubling.
That's a scary thing. So, I will tell you, the closest thing I had to that, when I was first opening up, and when I say opening up, I mean opening up your psychic centers. There are
right.
seven main energy centers, the chakras and so forth, based on Eastern philosophy. But when you start opening up psychically, you will experience those on many levels. You're just opening yourself up. So it's almost like a light in the darkness. And those in that lower level might be drawn to that darkness and also might want that strength, that prana, that energy of life. So they'll go near you.
So it's just a door, no telling what'll walk through.
Oh, I've had some scary things when I first started. I was in bed, I'd wake up and there was something right on top of me. And I felt really weird and I said, okay, and this is very interesting, this is how I got protected. Intuitively, it just came to me. I said in my mind this thing, I said, are you of God? Are you of light? And immediately it dispersed. The word love and the word God, by
guess,
the way.
Guess that was your answer.
Yep. The word love and the word God are two of the fastest vibrational words we have. You know, every sound is a vibration. And God and love are one of the fastest vibrations we have. So if this thing is from a lower sphere and it goes into a very bright, bright room, it's just like us. When we go into a bright room, we have to close our eyes, squint our eyes. It's too bright. It's too powerful. Same thing with those words, love and God. So surround oneself with that. And that's major protection right there.
Now, I realize that I do this kind of program, and so I'm going to draw these sorts of people that have experienced this kind of thing. But I'm telling you right now, James, I have never seen such a response in my life. And my opinion would be that things are in the middle of a change, that some sort of veil is beginning to thin out a little bit, and people, they're just seeing more of the other side than they ever have before, whatever it is.
Art, you're so, gosh, you are, I'm going to tell you how aware and smart you are, smart Art, because you're right on. You're right on with a beat of everything, because right now...
I'm just observing.
You are pretty smart. You're pretty acute. Because right now, I believe that there's a change in the vibration of this planet. I think we're spinning faster and faster and faster. And I think that we're getting very, very close to moving into, if you want to call it, other dimensions, or the veil is indeed getting thinner. Things being sped up, sped up, sped up.
Yeah.
I was thinking today, the concept of October and April and months, months seem very differently to me than it did when I was a child. They don't just, and of course that comes naturally with age, but it seems the whole concept of time and things of changing, even now more with this 9/11, it seems that things are speeding up even more. I think, and I've heard this before, that there are two planets of Earth. There's a replica of the Earth, and there's the Earth we're living in now. This Earth is moving into a fourth dimension, and those who do not want to ascend and move up to that other dimension will be stuck in the other replica of the Earth, which is a third dimension. That is what I've heard, and I tell you, I think you are exactly right. I think we're speeding up more and more, and because we're speeding up to a faster vibration, more people are going to be aware of other beings around. No doubt about
that. That is one of the major conclusions that I think I've come to in my life, that things are speeding up. I, you know, not a book plug, I wrote The Quickening because I so profoundly felt in every aspect of human life, socially, politically, environmentally, you name the area, everything is speeding up. And
that's... Isn't that life, though? Isn't that evolution? Isn't that progression? Isn't that why we're here? To progress, to move. And I think that's why we're here.
Well, that's what's happening, so apparently so. Mm-hmm. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James von Prague. Hi. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Hi.
Where are you, Max. Sir?
I'm in South Florida. My name is Max.
Okay,
and
Max, go ahead.
I have a question about what you mentioned, Mr. von Prague, about the reasons why children may leave the Earth, you know, God forbid,
right.
early, prematurely.
Yes.
And, you mentioned that this was something that people need to, a lesson that they need to learn.
Exactly.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes. What I want to say when I was saying this, the perspective of life has to change as far as what we believe that the timeline of death for and life. Many of us think that you have to live up to 70, 80, 90 years to be a fulfilled life, when really on a soul level, it's all about experience. So that soul might be a child and just need those 10 years or those 5 years. So it isn't really according to our clock, it's to that soul's clock, if you will.
Well, the question I have for you is, I am a believer. I do believe in God, so I'm not asking.
Good.
I'm not. But why? if that, why couldn't God have arranged a different way? Why do people have to go through that suffering to learn that lesson? If he's God, why couldn't he make a more perfect way of, I mean, aren't there easier way to learn lessons? If you're God, couldn't you create it a different way?
And you know what? If I was God, I could, in my God's mind, I could tell you, but I think that maybe this really could be one of the most compassionate ways, and that we're not aware of it, that going through what we appear, what appears to be suffering on a physical level, can be something which is one of the most compassionate ways for that soul to grow and to teach one another.
Or God, perhaps, if he could speak bluntly, might say, no pain, no gain.
And you know what? When you, if there's no such thing as death, there is really, you have a whole different perspective when you come back.
All right. Come back, we will, in a moment. Stay right where you are. I'm Art Bell. Again, James von Prague. James, the news was pretty big the other day. Big news. It was basically the ACT team, which cloned a human. They actually created a human embryo using the same technique, roughly, that they used on Dolly the sheep, scraped out the DNA from a human egg cell, then injected it with the nucleus from a human skin cell,
scary.
And then finally kick-started the egg with electricity, and it lived. Now, this is obviously the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to begin cloning human beings.
You bet.
No question about it. It's on the way, and I guess I'd like to get your you're so spiritual. What is your take on this?
Interesting how man, another example of how man tries to be God or play God. That's just one. Nuclear bomb, another one. You know, I believe that everything has a true spark of God, every living form. To replicate a physical body, what appears to be, you know, I don't know because it hasn't been perfected yet. I think it's wrong, number one. I don't think we should play God. I don't know as far as the spiritual point. I'm sure from a spiritual point of view, you know, very aware of it. Spirit is very aware of these things that are happening. You know, man is given so many choices. He's given so many opportunities to do great things. You know, and this could be a great thing. I think it'd be a wonderful thing if it's used in the correct manner.
I'm not sure what the correct manner is.
You know, cell regeneration, if they could help with diseases, cerebral palsy, diabetes. I mean, that would be one thing to do.
Well, of course, that's exactly what they say they're going to do with this.
What they say
and what they do.
What's going to happen, I believe, are two of the things. Because I think, I don't know, the ego of man is so strong, and I think the greed aspect is so strong. I would hope that we've evolved enough to think that there's a sanctity of life and respect life. But, you know, Art, I don't think we have. Obviously, because look what's going on around us with this war. I don't know. It's very scary to me. I'm very scared about it.
Well, we are certainly about to enter the realm of real creation and the ability to modify genetic structure to come up with a being of our creation, of our choice. It's a sobering
thought. It's a weird thing. You know, many times people say, why can't, if you do what you do, it's psychic phenomena and so forth, well, science would be able to measure it. I'm saying, well, wait a minute. Science might not have the tools to measure it because they're not evolved enough to that energetic system. I don't know if science has reached the form yet, even though they're cloning things. I think God is much grander and larger in scale than what we think.
Well, isn't there a plan for every baby born, and that plan was predestined by the mating of the sperm and the egg?
Correct. So, you know, who's to say? Who's to say that there won't be those souls who come back to be a part of this. I think that, you know, you can duplicate the physical body, but I don't think you can duplicate the spirit. So I think there is another spirit that would come into that body, knowing the ramifications, knowing that perhaps that the health of that clone might not be as strong as it would be with a regular reproduction. I mean, you know what I mean? That's well, that with Dolly the sheep also.
Yeah, I guess we're going to find out, and apparently pretty soon. First time caller line, you're on the air with James Von Prague. Hello.
Greetings, Art.
Greetings.
James?
Hi.
Hi. I found out that I have some gifts,
yep.
And one of them is psychometry.
Great.
And I've been listening to my teachers. I found out, yes, we do have teachers.
Yep.
And one thing that I've been told is time is not linear. It is
right.
A circle.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is it a circle, that's two-dimensional, it's also three-dimensional. It's a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sphere is also like layers of an onion. It's in layers.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you.
Okay.
I totally agree with you, and I've heard the same thing.
My teacher's here. I can tell.
Not in that way, but it's very, very true. You're right.
Yeah.
There are layers. They're very much like layers. Just like us, we are layers. You know, we're one of many, if you will.
Yeah, and I can relate to scaring people away with your gifts, because I do psychometry, and I kept a ledger, and...
It's just that, sir, whether it's you or James or whoever it might be, Daniel, it's that a person who is not used to this is really made extremely uncomfortable by it. It's kind of like being in the presence of Superman, who can look through your clothes and, you know, whatever. In other words, you almost feel as though your privacy is being violated. That's
mm-hmm.
pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty close. And that's a very uncomfortable feeling. And so I'm sure a lot of people who have been around you, James, feel about that way.
I have an advantage, Art. I have an advantage. And, you know, it's very true that when you're intuitive, you can see people for who they really are. Now, Spirit also discusses when we pass over, you see one another for exactly who you are on your spiritual evolution. You cannot hide your thoughts. Thoughts are as clear as the day. You are nude standing in front of people. They see you for your character. You are wearing, you know, they talk about robes that you wear, or clothes that you wear in spirit.
Yes.
It represents who you are as a character, what your character is like. And that's what it is. People know you for who you are. It's not how much money you have. It's not your success, your power over people as it is in this life. It's the character of your soul. And people see you for exactly who you are.
Okay, everybody, so think about that. We're all going to be spiritual nudists.
That's right. Ellie, I should mention also, Artie, you mentioned psychometry, and I do that. In the book, I mentioned that, too. With psychometry, for those who don't know it, as like I said earlier, everything is energy. And when you wear something, like a ring or earrings or you have keys or everything, but your energy goes onto that object. So when you hand that object to someone else, they can feel that energy and describe to you who you are, what's going on with you, and so forth. So that's what psychometry is.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's easy for people to understand this in a simplistic way. We are all radio stations. Here we go. We're constantly transmitting and receiving signals, transmitting energy and receiving energy. And what I do, and other intuitives, is we're able to tune into that station. Let's say each person is a station. Mm-hmm. We're able to tune into that frequency and pick up signals. Okay.
Have you ever held a murder weapon?
Yes, I have held a murder weapon. And I used to do kidnappings. I used to work with the police, and I used to go after people who would do kidnappings of children, and it was pretty scary stuff I would see and hold. And I'd pick up things left and right. And part of the miniseries, there's a scene in there, the second half of the miniseries, based upon those, you know, that story about the suicide and the murder. And, you know, I see these things. Like, when I'm doing a reading, I'll see the murder or I'll see the suicide very clearly. I mean, there's so many times I'll say, I'm tasting gunmetal in my mouth, so this had to be a suicide.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. And I feel it. I feel
it. Well, how do you handle that? I mean, I was a 911 dispatcher for Monterey County for a year, and I couldn't handle it. I mean, I got to the point where I said to myself, I am going to die of a heart attack or an ulcer if I keep this up. The work is just too damn serious. It's life and death, and you've got to be experiencing the same sort of thing, and I just don't know how you keep yourself centered.
Well, yes and no, and the reason is this. When you have to do this work, and this work is very important, spirit communication is very important, it's like a surgeon. A surgeon goes in there, and he opens people up, and you know what? The sight of blood freaks me out. I could not do it. And it's the same type of thing. You have to become very objective and look at that from that point of view. You have to really, in a way, put your emotions to the side, if you will, and really look at what it is, because if you get involved emotionally, you will screw up the signal. You will screw up the message, and your own impetus gets involved, and then you're not giving a clear message, a clear channel.
But I could never do that. I always took it home with me. You know, if a child died or there was a fire and people died, I took that home with me every night, and I couldn't block it. I could not block it.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard, and it takes years and years of development. When I did this work, and because I'm so empathetic and sensitive, when I first started, I was just like that. I had to learn how to shut that part off, if you will, or put it to the side and look at the true message and the objective. And when you realize that they're much better off right now, they're in a better place, they're freer, they're happier, they're joyful, that situation they were going through with the death, whether it's a murder or a suicide, or, I mean, I've seen it all, Art. I have seen it all.
I'm sure you have.
Hacking bodies, I mean, I've seen it all. You realize that's just the way that the spirit leaves the body. It's just the escape route, if you will.
So in James' private life, there are times when you turn off the psychic switch and you sit down and watch a good movie or do whatever else you like to do in life that is a diversion from what you do.
Oh, yeah. And that comes from development. And I wrote in Heaven and Earth, the new book, I wrote a development circle. And what the development circle is, there are ways that you learn how to open yourself up and close yourself down. And that is, you know what, that's such a vital part of development in intuition and mediumship. And so many practitioners out there, or teachers, do not teach that basic fundamental.
And that's probably a pretty big pitfall, isn't it?
It certainly is, because when you open yourself up wide open and you don't know how to close down, you open yourself up to all those things out there. Just like we talked about the Ouija board, but many people think the Ouija board is evil. Well, you know, if you don't do it, you don't prepare yourself properly, and you open yourself up to what's out there, you'll pick up anything on any level.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I had a very, very bad experience with a Ouija board.
Yeah.
Wild card line, you're on the air with James Von Prague. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes,
go ahead, ma'am.
I'm hoping it's me that's on.
It is.
Yes. I have a question. I wonder if we're troubling to the departed.
If we keep on thinking about them?
Yes, and when we talk to them all day long, which I do quite a bit because we were married 60 years.
I know, honey. He's around you strong.
Well, but her question is a pretty good one. In other words, is there, in some way, is she maintaining a tie that might not be good for the spirit?
It's a very good question, and the answer is yes or no. And what I'll say to you is this. It is like us in a room when the telephone is ringing and ringing and ringing, and we want to just leave the room because we have other things to do. That darn phone keeps on ringing, and we have to answer it.
Right.
The spirit people, number one, they are living in a world where it's very busy. They're not just hanging around on clouds.
Right.
They have things to do. They have missions to do. They're living their greater life. They are very aware of our thoughts. That's why you do not need a medium to communicate in a certain way, because you can do it with your thoughts. They hear you. They're living in a very mental world, and they hear your thoughts. They hear your love for them.
So then couldn't we be, in some cases, kind of like the perpetual calls you get trying to get you to switch phone companies?
Right. In a way, Art, it's holding them back. In a way it is. It certainly is, because, you know, they feel your love, and they want to help you, but at the same time, they feel your sadness as well. And that doesn't make them feel any better. The best thing you can do to them is send them love. And, you know, you can send them thoughts, and they realize that you're sending them these loving thoughts. But remember, you'll see them again one day, and you don't have to keep on bombarding them, because they know very well that you know, because thought works very differently. Energy works differently over there. They receive your thought in a split second. So you don't have to keep on thinking about them over and over and over
again.
Well,
that's kind of a tough love message, but it makes sense.
I have to tell you what I know.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Von Prague. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
This is Tim from Belbuckle, Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
My question is, if a person dies that had intense hatred for you, can they mess up your life or cause you harm, Father, in the spirit world?
Only if you let them. So here we go back before we were talking about, you know, your own power and you taking in charge of your life. You know, the best way to counteract that, so they can't attack you if you don't let them, okay? But I would also send them love. I would just send out thoughts of love, love, love. And hopefully they will see that love and they'll realize what they did wrong and they might change their way. And that will help them and it'll help you also. It'll help teach them. I should mention also, you know, just because people pass over into spirit, we always think that they're the ones who are the enlightened ones. They're the ones who teach us. That's not always true. We teach them by how we live on the earth. Our example of living on the earth can teach them how to live as well. So it works both ways. So you have to send them love. That will certainly help them.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So then if somebody dies whose life, while they were alive, was devoted to hating your guts and going after you in every way they can, should your expectation be that you might face a little trouble after they're gone?
No, you know what? I would say not any more than you had when they were alive. Exactly.
Yeah, except you might not see it coming, as you did when they were alive. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Von Prague. Hi.
Hi. Oh, Art, you and James are my two favorite men. You're the greatest light workers. I'm so excited.
Well, thank you.
I'm Darlene from Seattle.
Okay.
I'll see you, Darlene, in the next couple of weeks. I'll be up there.
Oh, wonderful.
Book signing.
Can
Check
you
out
say
my website.
Where?
Check out my website.
I will. Thank you. I wondered if you could explain a little bit about the differences between what you do, which is positive mediumship, and the types of negative mediumship where people allow themselves to be taken over or used. You know, they get out of the way so an entity can actually...
Right, trans mediumship.
Right.
Well, you know, again, I mean, it's hard to say this because I know some wonderful physical mediums who do trance work. You know, you like attracts like. And if you're working from a high vibration of energy and a loving energy, you will attract that. I personally have gone into trance, but I do not like it. And the reason I don't like it is because I'm a control freak. I like to be in control. I'm on the physical earth. I want to stay on the earth. There's no reason for me to walk out of the earth this time. I'm really leery of those who do trance. I'm sorry to say, I'm very leery, and when someone goes into trance, I must hear what that message, the nuances of that message are, in order to know if that person is real, or it's their ego getting through and doing that, because I've seen so much of that where it's ego. But I also must say to you, there is some overshadowing of spirit, where there could be. You have to listen to the truth of that message, what it sounds like. As far as evil trance work, I really don't know what you mean by evil, per se, when they go to trance.
All right. Listen, we're rapidly running out of time, but I want to cover a couple of things.
Yep.
Your new book is, I guess, in bookstores now?
Right now. Yep.
Amazon.com, all the usual suspects.
That's right. Heaven and Earth, yep.
How do you like this book compared to your first?
Well, actually, people have compared it to Talking to Heaven. They said
out of
the four books I've done, this one is very close to Talking to Heaven because it's a basic psychic guidebook. It teaches people on a very easy reading level. You know, I write very simply because I don't like to read books personally that are complex. I like to pick up any page, open up any page, and get something. And that's how this is written. I really like this as a practical way to begin to listen to that inner voice. So I really, really love it that way.
All right. Your CBS special with Ted Danson?
That CBS miniseries will be out in February called Talking to Heaven. And my own TV show, which you're going to be a guest on one day, Art, will be called Beyond, and that's going to be on in September, and it's a daily talk show.
What network or channel?
That will be in syndication, so they're selling it
in marketing. Oh, in syndication. No kidding.
Yeah, it's called Beyond, and that'll be on next September.
Is it going to be a show where you're going to do readings? You're going to have guests?
It's great. We did the pilot. The way it's going to work is it's an hour show right now. We have guests in the audience I do readings for, but we also have other people on, paranormal people on, who are going to do their work. I go out to locations. I do haunted houses. I go out to locations where there were plane crashes or whatever. Different psychic phenomena or different types of phenomena, UFO phenomena, all that sort of thing will be explored. And it'll be interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, so you'll be on there. Don't worry.
Any idea of what time of day or night that will air?
I think they're trying to get it into the afternoon in most of the markets. So it'll be late afternoon, but I think it might be repeated in the evening as well.
Oh, my. So you're a busy man.
And I also have spiritual tours around the world. I do a spiritual tour with Dr. Brian Weiss, who's the number one past life regressionist in the world. And we're doing a tour to the Caribbean and also to Tahiti in May. That's all on my website. But that's a week-long workshops with past life regressions and readings and tuning into your own spiritual self, if you will.
Your next book signing is where?
My next book signing is in San Francisco at Corte Madera, and that's on December 8th. That's on my website, vanprague.com.
All right. Well, I imagine you're going to get a big crowd there. All right, my friend.
Thanks, Art.
What an incredible program. Thank you so much.
God bless, Art. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.
There you are, folks. That's James von Prague. I'm Art Bell from the high desert where the clouds cover the sky and it's getting cold in the desert. For now, ta-ta.